Welcome, everybody, to... I'm not going to sing the rest of it, but to the Atlanta Warhammer, the podcast experience of a lifetime. You paid for your whole seat, but you're only going to need the edge, because we are going to tantalize you, and otherwise, and just in general, just excite you with our story today. Talking about Bellacor, whatever you want to call him. He's here. He's made his reappearance in the Mortal Realms, and he's done some stuff. He's pulled some strings. He's made some things blow up. It's a pretty exciting book. So we're going to dive into that a little bit. But before we do, I feel like doing this alone would be really boring and kind of silly, and a bit psychopathic. So we're going to listen to the introductions of my friends, starting from my digital left. Do they remember? Do you remember?
God knows, is that me?
I don't know.
Yeah, sure. All right, well, fine. It's me. I am the top half of I'm the top half of that dragon zombie. I'm Josh Rebuck.
Gross. I do not like that. And on my other side, it's not me or Josh.
Armed with a knife and a whip, I'm Dr. Cowboy David Hughes.
No one's gonna know why that's funny.
Yes, but you guys know.
We do.
And that's all that matters.
Oh, that's
because you're my friends.
You brought joy to our hearts. And at some point, we'll maybe reveal the secrets of Dr. Cowboy from Australia to the rest of our audience at home.
I'm telling you, our little pre-recording talks, we gotta record them and then just Patreon that.
But then if we record those, then what happens to the talks before the pre-recording? Are they the pre-recording talks then? It's a cycle, man. We just need to be live 24/7. We're always
keep adding
on.
More and more layers to our Patreon tiers
until eventually we've just got GoPros strapped to us. You're getting the 24/7 Atlanta Warhammer experience. It's gonna be a lot of depressing watching us paint miniatures, or what I do, which is put them all in little formations on the table and then stare at them quietly for 20 minutes, trying to imagine how it will work. Which I'm sure to the NSA agents wiretapping my house doesn't look weird at all.
No, totally normal.
No, totally, absolutely normal. So
it's not like you have a white house, like an actual white house, like set up like in the middle there with all of your little toys.
And that's when the Stormcast will move in, take the second perimeter. Yeah, that would be.
You're welcome, by the way. The FBI is all kinds of tapped on this one now.
Yeah, that's fine. Whatever, they're already here. Hey, people that are paid to listen to us, sorry. And to our fans who aren't paid to listen to us, we're also probably sorry. But we're here with the help of some people who may listen to us. We've got some sponsors, so let's hit it from the top. Number one, in order of the way that it was written down, Gigabytes Cafe. Gigabytes Cafe is a store where you can buy things that we will talk about on this show today. Gigabytesonline.com. Go there. They do shipping. You can do touchless delivery. Or you can just go in the store. You still got to wear a mask, but go in and safely look around and pick up some stuff. They got all kinds of things coming in, even despite the horrible allocations that GW is currently doing, which we'll talk to a little bit later. Sponsor number one. Who's got sponsor number two?
I'll take sponsor number two. Hey, that's Josh here. Llama Juice Painting is sponsor number two. Hey, you know, guys, there's a new Bellacor model, and I don't know about you, but I fucking suck at painting, so take it to Llama Juice Painting. He'll do a great job for you instead.
Good, solid, quick one, man. That was good. Solid 20-minute bit. We'll record that. It's perfect. We got one more sponsor, though. How are people even hearing us right now? Where are these digital ones and zeros coming from?
Well, if you, too, want to flounder through making a podcast every other week on a Tuesday. Actually, no, it's Wednesday.
It's Wednesday. We've tried so many days to make this happen.
And we've been trying since Monday, so that's not even, who knows at this point.
Yes, if you also want to flounder through making a podcast and potentially put us off the air, hit up Blueberry Podcasting, who hosts our podcasting.
Yeah. Every other week.
Yeah, and use code ATLWAR and you'll save something. I forgot what the offer was. Use that code.
It's in the commercial later on in the show.
Yeah, it's in the commercial. You'll hear it and you'll go, oh, that's the thing. Yeah, so you get that when you sign up through us. And we appreciate that because it makes us feel cool and whatnot. So, yeah, that's sponsors out of the way. A little bit of housekeeping real fast. We got our Facebook back up. We've mentioned it a few times. But if you want to go to facebook.com/realATLWAR to find us, That would be super cool. So you don't miss stuff because we got articles as well as the podcast and contests. We got all kinds of junk. You can definitely while away some hours at work on our site. And while you're whiling away those hours, we would love if you would rate us on iTunes. It takes just a few seconds. You can do it while you listen to our wonderful voices right now. Give us a rating. Leave a message if you want to. That'd be great. We would love to get some messages and read them and then mispronounce your name horribly trying to do so. So, yeah, let us know what you like about the show or don't like so that we can, you know, feel bad about it and cry more than we usually cry. I told you these GoPros are going to be real depressing when it's, you know, 24/7 us. And then finally, and then that was a good time to have just like a silence as we all gaze out of various windows in the rain. Finally, league stuff. Local players, if you're in the league, we're extending it so more people can get to play. Go to Atlanta Warhammer and be sure to record your games and all of that. And I think, that was a lot. That was a lot of housekeeping stuff. The housekeeping thing gets bigger every episode.
Keep getting bigger houses, man.
Oh, that's true. We're moving on up.
Got to get a house cleaner soon.
We do. Oh, man. That is the lap of luxury, I think, where you don't have to clean your own house. Can you imagine, though, like, you're paying somebody to clean your house, and as they're doing all this hard work, you're sitting there, like, painting a little toy? Like, I feel like I would...
Yes, I can. I can imagine this right now. It sounds amazing. Please, oh, God, please make it happen. Give us money! Give us money!
I feel like I would be embarrassed. I would be like, yes, please toil for me. I can't be arsed to do my own dishes, but I really need to paint the Space Marine, you see.
And then you put on the monocle and then begin painting.
Excellent.
Yes, I think I will have the, hold on, contrasted Dark Angels green today. Thank you.
Oh, yes. And I'm glad to see you grabbed a paint pot to yell something out real fast. Do you think, like, super rich people play Warhammer?
Yes.
Like, I mean, because you gotta expect, obviously, it's an expensive hobby, but, like, I'm talking, like, real rich. Like, do you think there's, like, a Warhammer club where people are paying, and they just buy an army for that day?
Okay, then... Wait, what's your classification of
let's
real
say
rich?
Let's say millionaire. Let's say, do you think there is a millionaire's club of Warhammer players somewhere in the world?
Oh, probably.
Yeah, there has to be.
But at some point, it stops being a millionaire's club, and it's just dudes with Warhammer figures.
That's after they bought too many armies. Oh, cripes! We're no longer millionaires, but check out my new Space Marines! I'm trying to imagine, like, the most rich, because I think we've seen where they have the memes of people playing Magic and, like, every card is an iPhone or something. Like, the richest way to play Warhammer. It might just be to play Warhammer. That might be the most expensive way to do it.
We'll find out real soon, right? Because, you know, we got some new models coming out.
Oh, these models are so cool looking.
And, I can only imagine how much some of these models are going to run you. And so
let's leap in. We're recording this right now while Warhammer Fest 2021 is going on. We're doing this recording on Wednesday, so we've heard the AOS day and pretty much ignored the other days.
Yeah, because we heard the day that we care about, and that's the one that we're going to stick with. So screw you, everyone else.
Yeah, you didn't come here for commentary on whatever these Imperial Guards are or the Sisters of Battle church tanks. I do kind of like the church tank, though. I mean, it's everything you love about churches and tanks combined. So it's a good value.
Can't be mad about that.
No, but we have got some cool AOS stuff to talk about. The biggest thing, I think, to talk about is literally one of the biggest things, Kragnos, the End of Empires.
Oh, man, I'm so excited for this model.
The rumors are finally, everyone's put to rest. Is it a new Beast of Chaos? No. Is it its own faction? Kinda. Is it cool? Yes. We know what Kragnos is now. He is a ancient god of earthquakes. He's a guy that goes and beats up dragons because he wants to. And he's bored, so he's very destruction-y, which makes sense, is that he is now, I guess, kind of like a de facto leader of the destruction faction. He's certainly gonna make Gordrak unhappy.
Yeah, guys, I gotta, as one of the fellow destruction players here, I gotta eat some crow, all right? I'm ready to eat a little bit of crow here. I called for the death of the Grand Alliance, and I was wrong. It just got renamed.
It did. Yeah, it's not dead, and it's not the same. They're just moving to this system now where, like, you got your big soup army.
Yeah.
You know, you don't have to run Grand Alliance Order. You got cities right there.
You don't have to run Grand Alliance Chaos. You run Bellicor and his associated Chaos factions.
Yeah, or hell, just Slaves to Darkness is, you know, you can flavor it however you want. You can get a ton of different options out of that as well, including all your stuff. Yeah, and now for, well, and Death is just Legions of Nagash is,
of course,
pretty much soup.
And now we have Kragnos. And the multitude of destruction that he will get to bring with us. And from what we've seen in the preview, it's all of it. Like, there's not a destruction that is left out of here. It's all destruction.
Yeah, he is all smashing all the time. So he's been freed. Apparently he was locked under the mountain by Lord Croak. It's the only way to stop the Juggernaut. They had confused him and then stuck him underground. And now he's out and he's ready to smash literally everything. He does not care what it is. It's going to get destroyed. We saw a little bit of his rules too, which I like. They got the throwaway rule and the really cool one. The really cool one being his shield, where basically you roll three die. I'm sorry, every time he's affected by a spell, if you roll greater than the casting value of the spell, you ignore it. That's it. Just didn't happen.
Yep.
So,
and you don't get just 2d6.
Yeah, you get three. And so some of these spells that have a casting value of a 5 or a 6, well, that's never happening to him. He's rarely going to get Mystic Bolted, that's for sure. And then his other ability so far that we've seen is you add 1 to bravery for destruction units wholly within 12 of him. Okay. That's a thing. I guess if you clumped a bunch of gits around him, that might be kind of funny. But man, that model though, guys, like seriously.
Oh, dude, it's so beautiful.
It's so cool looking, and it's meaty too. It's a good size. It's, you know, they've got a picture on the page. We're looking at the Warhammer community page, everyone. You can see his size. He's not as tall as a Mega Gargant, but he's close. But I think he's on the same base as them. Looks like he is.
Looks pretty close, yeah. Yes. Are you guys in favor of open mouth Kragnos or closed mouth Kragnos?
I think open.
Okay.
I think if you're going to be the God of Destruction, you're going to be yelling.
Yeah, I kind of like open mouth. But yeah. I'll probably end up doing closed mouth because it's easier to paint.
Love it.
Good strategy. Good strategy. Excellent.
I am particularly excited for his shield myself, just because as the destruction that I've always kind of built my stuff is around, mine are all come from the realm of Shaman. You know, it's all the metal bits. So I feel like I'm going to get like a really nice, cool, like metallic paint job on his weapons and shield and all the bits and bobs that he kind of has laced around him. I got to figure out what color I want to do that skin though, because I can't do what the GW is going for that.
Yeah, that skin is, I mean, looking at the model, it's really not that complex in terms of a giant centerpiece, because you've got your armor, which they've kind of done all in one or two tones. You've got the hair, the horns, and the skin, and that's really about it.
Which, to be honest, is kind of a breath of fresh air from all the giant centerpiece models they've been putting out lately.
From when you scroll down and see Lord Croak and go, dear God, how would I ever even paint this thing to look good? Yeah, I like it. It's simple, but it's very striking. This is one of the times the GW color scheme really looks good, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. Like, this looks solid. You could do a lot of cool stuff with it. You could cover him with tattoos. He fits in every destruction army, so he's a little bit like Gotrek in that sense. He can just show up. I'm interested to see what he's going to do in a Sons of Behemoth army. Because it's like, okay, wait, are you telling me I can bring less models to a tournament? Done.
It's five models now.
Yeah, because I mean, we don't know his points, but I'm thinking he's got to be up there, right?
He's got to be in like the at least like 360, 440 range.
Oh, I
right?
was thinking six more. To seven.
Yeah.
You think he's 600 to 700?
Yeah, like a Frost Lord on a Stonehorn is 400. This dude's got to be at least 5.
Right, yeah, Lord Celestine on Stardrake is, I think, 560, somewhere in that ballpark, and that's where the Mega Gargants kind of hover around as well. So, yeah, but then you got Nagash, who's 840. Like, and Teclis is 6-something? I don't know, he should be more. But I think...
Teclis should be, like, 1,500 points by himself.
Teclis should be, banned. So, anyway... I think I'm, you know, let's put some guesses out. I'm going to say 750 because they felt the need to say he can be included in any army. So he's over the ally points. Automatically, we know he's over 400 because otherwise they wouldn't have to say that. Of course he could be included, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to say 700 because I think he's going to just be a total brick house. Like, he'll be the thing that your opponent has to deal with in order to win the game. Unless he only counts as one model on an objective or something like that, in which case it's actually worse to bring him in a Mega Gargant army.
David, go next because I have to look something up.
You're not allowed to pull this Price is Right bullshit with me, okay?
No,
I want to hear some 701.
No,
okay?
I have a very specific number that I'm after, and you'll understand in a minute for it. Okay, so okay, go
I'm
ahead.
I'm gonna go with 660 points.
660. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well,
540, because that is the same cost as a Gordrak. And in my head canon, Gordrak and Kragnos hate each other.
Okay. I could see that.
Because they both want to be the big guy that punches stuff. So I want them to be the exact same points. And I really want now Kragnos versus Gordrak on the table. Like, I got to have it.
Yeah.
Got to have it, baby.
We'll talk a little more about what his book will mean, but it would be interesting to see if Destruction, the reason it doesn't win is because, you know, Gordrak isn't super keen on following this guy. Maybe he feels a little threatened. Or maybe they get along because Kragnos is bigger and clearly very powerful, and Gordrak goes, all right, I'm not going to die fighting that.
I swear to God, if they kill Gordrak in the Kragnos book, I'm burning the whole damn thing to the ground.
Yeah, but it would suck to have one of your favorite characters killed in one of these books, wouldn't it? Hey, you should have them take from you your favorite city and narrative setting, too. But that would suck. Well, luckily, this one, in Bellicor, nothing bad happened to anybody I love.
Oh, no, not at all.
No. I'm over here as an ogre player, and I'm just doing just fine. I don't even have a named character.
Yeah, you got the one in the Cursed City Warhammer quest box. You got a named character. He's not an ogre. He's a Cities of Sigmar, I think. Yeah. Kragnos looks cool.
He's going to be burning eight in the countryside real soon.
Definitely.
So I know we're going to talk about the book in a second, and this is at least the first act that we're talking about, but do you think what happened with the Seraphon is why he's released? If they sealed him up, do you think they brought him back out?
It's possible. I don't remember from the video if we saw why he broke free. And is he in Beastgrave, which is what the Underworlds game is about? Are they freeing him? I read something about that and thought, huh, that was kind of an interesting take. So maybe, I don't know. We'll have to see. That kind of would make sense though. What with them causing seismic explosions across the universe?
Yeah, I mean. Yeah. Maybe it's just part of the great plan. You know, they sealed him up and they were just waiting to whip him out like a trump card.
Yeah. Sometimes I feel like the great plan thing is something the Seraphon fall back on even when things go wrong. Like, the house is burning down and they're like, yes, all according to plan.
Well, they're what? They're the opposite of Tzeentch, right? Like, lore-wise, they're, you know, Tzeentch is their biggest enemy, right?
Yeah, well, yeah, they're logical space dinosaur demons, basically.
Yeah, and, you know, Tzeentch always says, oh, it was all part of a ruse.
Yeah, Tzeentch is like, that was part of my plan, and then he immediately ruins his plan that he just finished.
But that was part of my plan.
Yeah.
It's the same thinking, honestly. Really, I think it's just two factions being led by a guy that doesn't really know what's going on.
Lord Groke he hasn't known who he is for the last 1,000 years. They're just like, oh, yeah, he told us to all go here and blow up this thing. Why? Well, I don't know, because he's actually just a mummy. He doesn't speak. Sometimes he gives us wacky spirit visions, and we just go with whatever he says, because we're afraid he might just unthink us all from reality. I guess that's a pretty good reason to follow somebody, if they could just stop thinking of you and you don't exist anymore. Pretty powerful.
That'd be a pretty terrible way to go, I'm not gonna lie.
Yeah, pretty powerful. He could just blip everyone. Thanos got nothing on Lord Croak.
I don't know. A lot of Seraphon went in very terrible ways in this book.
Yeah, they died for the great plan. A lot of them died for the great plan.
They were very descriptive sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah, that's one thing. The fights in this book were very grisly. But wait, we got to get through these new models, and then we'll get to the book. We're getting excited to get ahead of ourselves, because this was a really interesting book. More models that got released. We've kind of seen all of these over time, but they just sort of put them all together. Lord Croak. Thoughts on Lord Croak?
Good upgrade. Solid.
Yeah, definitely amazing upgrade. He looks a lot better than he did.
Yeah. Yeah, he's...
He actually looks like a centerpiece model now, which is not something you could say in the previous iteration of Lord Croak.
No, yeah, the previous one, in an army with really cool centerpieces, looked so dumb, honestly, just floating on his chair by himself. Like, it never fit to me, looking at a Seraphon army visually, to have, oh, and here's a toad in a chair. Like, it kind of looked weird. This guy looks a lot more like he belongs in that army, visually.
And he's even got his Princess Leia there.
Yeah. That kit is got a lot of stuff on it. A lot of stuff. I'm glad I don't want to buy it, because I would not want to paint it. Because I feel like I would never do it justice. Which is kind of how I feel about two models I sort of do want to buy, which are these Slaaneshi twins. Which are big old Keeper of Secrets-sized demons. The things that Slaanesh was gestating. The child, I think, is what these are.
The twins.
Yeah, they're real cool looking. I like them a lot. I hate
Marathi's babies.
Oh, yeah, little Marathi babies. Fuck Marathi, just saying.
Fuck Marathi. All my homies hate Marathi.
Yeah. But yeah, these demons look cool. I like them. These are very cool looking Slaanesh things. I don't want to paint the wings on them, because I think some of that stuff is like freehand, some of that shading and stuff that they've got going on there. And I know my limits, so we'll see if I ever get those. And then there's two more. There's the not sloppity Clean Piper from Sylvaneth. She's it's one of the spirity Sylvaneth things. I like this model. This is a weird ass model, and I like it. I'm here for it.
I like the bug hatching out of the top. You know, it's an interesting model.
Yeah, the vines kind of like rising up around the ground around them as they play. Yeah, this is a pretty cool looking like kit, like just by itself. And it's a Sylvaneth thing, which I don't think anybody really expected to see. So
yeah, it's kind of left field, but
yeah,
it's time that Sylvaneth gets a little bit of love.
Yeah,
like yeah, they're due.
They are due. And then we got the last set of models that they talked about, which in terms of the non-vampire models, they talked about a lot of stuff. The two vampire hunters, we've seen them as well, the father-daughter combo. I really love all the dad joke memes that are going out using them. It's wonderful. So they're cool, and they're going to fit into cities, obviously. But I think it's kind of neat that we're getting like all these little mini figure, like the Cursed City, and then these guys that fit into Cities of Sigmar as a faction. So kind of like what you were saying, Josh, it's not really a grand alliance, but it is kind of a grand alliance.
Yeah. It's the rebranding.
Yeah.
We're marketing people. It's a rebrand.
Oh, it totally is. And I like Cities becoming this kind of faction where you can do some really cool narrative lists with all these named heroes. I think they'd be absolute garbage on the table in terms of like a competitive game. But if you wanted to do some really cool narrative stuff, Cities is turning kind of into a way to do that. And I think that's kind of neat.
Yeah.
And, you know, maybe you're like, hey, you know what would be the best part about a city? Is all those warm blood bags just walking around on the surface.
Blood bags.
Ready to get eaten, question mark, by the mother of nightmares? What? So,
oh man.
So when I heard people talking about the mother of nightmares before this week started, I was like, oh, this is going to be a cool model. This is going to be fun. And then it gets here, and I'll be honest, man, I'm not going to bash it too much, because at the end of the day, this is a really nice, really sculpted model.
Yes.
It's a very nicely sculpted two models.
Somewhere
yeah, it can be two models
because it's a model that looked like it was sawed in half from another model and then stuck together.
So, yeah, it is technically a very well done model. Conceptually, I kind of think it shits the bed. I'm not gonna... This is... I looked at this and thought, oh no. This... And I, this is my personal opinion. You know, I've seen some people love it, but I look at it and I was like, nah, this looks not right. Like the torso, I don't know. I want to get in. I want to do it, but I want you guys to tell me what you think.
I like it. I think it's interesting. I think it's neat. I mean, obviously, where the torso meets the other torso, it doesn't. It doesn't look like it. It doesn't look natural.
It's the title of my memoirs, by the way.
But other than that, I mean, that's like my only gripe with it. I'll be the first to say I don't like vampires at all. Like as a whole, like vampires, the whole theme of vampires, I don't like it.
Mm-hmm.
So for me to like a vampire model, it's doing something for me.
Yeah, okay. I mean,
like if I was going to buy this kit, I would take the chick off of it and I would use it as a kit bash. 100%.
Yeah, I have already seen people taking, you know, photoshopping off the torso, putting some legs on it, and then giving the beast its own kind of head through, yeah, like a Terrorgeist or a zombie dragon, or I mean, you could probably do all kinds of cool heads
like
on
I'm just glue a ogre torso to the top of it.
Yeah, I feel Dragon like ogre. This is going to be kitbashed a lot because it's the torso to shoulder ratio is what's weird, because it makes it look like the top half is the head of the creature instead of, yeah, like with a centaur or Kragnos, who's right there on the same page. Like, that's how a centaur body it looks. I appreciate them trying something different. I just, for me, it's like, nah. It doesn't hurt or help that I don't care too much about this style of vampire with like the bat wings and stuff. So yeah, hopefully it's not like necessary for an army list I would build.
Yeah, I like, it's one of those where I can understand where they were going when they were attempting this. But yeah, I just don't think it works. I think it's too, the two pieces of this model are too disparate to make one cohesive model for that is appealing across the board. Like, it's something, it needs to go back to the QA.
Yeah,
back to the QA testing.
I would have been.
I don't know. Techless made it through QA.
That's true. Well, never let it not be said that we're not equal opportunity bashers on terrible looking models when they come up from whatever faction.
I mean, we got plenty of good things to say for this next one.
Oh, yeah.
Car of the Beast.
Yeah. So this is the guy from Cursed City. Apparently, when you kill him in that game, it doesn't stick. He had a case of death, but got better. And he comes back as just a jacked up wolf man.
Yeah.
I was here for this. When they showed him and his grandma, this is what I want. I want this. I want a bunch of skeletons and I want a bunch of the new dogs. And that's my army. Because he's so, I like his little attendants. I'm curious if we're going to get more than just this pose out of him. Just because, I don't know. So for me, when I see like the blood effects and stuff, I'm always like, they never look good when I finish them. So I tend to like leave them off, you know,
mm-hmm.
And it looks like that's kind of part of his hand. But otherwise than that, like, it is a cool looking kit. Once again, it's simple. It's not a super complex looking character, but it strikes a very good dynamic pose.
That's the kind of profile, like, if you were to, like, silhouette that, you could buy it. Like, you could buy the silhouette of this model.
Yeah, yeah, look at the silhouette of this model, and then scroll up and look at the silhouette of the other thing, and then tell me what in the holy hell is going on with that other model. If you look at just its silhouette, it's like, oh, it's a spider, kind of. You know what? I want that, with the way the legs are on the thing above this, the bat monster, mm-hmm. like, it kind of looks more like a spider, almost, like, that would have been a cool direction to take it.
Oh, if it was like the sort of like the Drider.
Yeah.
Look from D&D. Yeah, I'd be okay with that.
Yeah, if they're not going to... I mean, this is an attempt at something new that didn't quite land where it should. I would have been okay with something old. But either way. I need to get back to Raktor. Radukar. Sorry. He looks cool.
Yeah.
I want him. And I want his grandma.
Dude, I actually like the Belladama Volga more than... more than Radikar as well. Yeah. Like I don't know. There's something about like Crazy Grandma riding a wolf.
Crazy
who also has like wolf legs peeking out from underneath her dress, and is just badass. Like I think what it is the sword, because the sword is so jagged and just beat like it has like full chunks taken out of it.
Yeah, really.
And you're like, oh yeah, she has used this. And she means business. And those wolves, it looks so good. I love her.
Definitely. This is the hot new take on Little Red Riding Hood that I was waiting for. Grandma is the wolf, and she's here to kill you. I like also that she's like Babushka Grandma with the giant fur hat and big fur. Like, she looks like she's, you know, she's got to stay warm and cozy. Yeah. If she had a little like knitted blanket over her legs, this would be my favorite. In fact, I might need to see if one of our friends can green stuff me a little knitted blanket and a little tiny, like, a cookie tin full of sewing stuff.
Oh, my God, yes, please.
I just want Grandma to go to the battlefield and just go toe-to-toe and murder things.
I kind of want to, the bottom wolf, I kind of want to make him look like a grandma, too, and it's kind of like the Little Red Riding Hood kind of thing.
Perfect, perfect. You know, you could get more of these and just have an entire army of wolf riding grannies, which is the name of my ska band earlier on. So.
I want to kit bash a bunch of my Mournfangs to just be these guys.
Every one of them is just a granny. Oh, yeah. And luckily, you don't really have to have those two dogs. You can get brand new dogs. We called it. We knew they were going to do new direwolves. And they did. And they did. Look good. Josh, I know you have a thought about some of them.
Tell us about your thought.
Yeah, yes.
On this bottom second from the left, Josh.
Okay, all right. Here we go, guys.
Josh's thoughts on direwolves, everyone.
The direwolves, on the whole, are good. There are a couple of direwolves that break a cardinal rule in makeup effects that you don't do things with, like, a peel back on the face and then a strap, kind of where the nose-ish would be on any of these creatures. The reason that you don't do that is because it instantly makes it look like a mask. Half of these dogs look like they're wearing masks. We don't want dire wolf dogs that are decomposing to look like masks. We want them to look like decomposing dogs. So the ones that are all, like, skulled out, awesome. The ones that have, like, the nice half face, awesome. The ones that strap over with the little muzzle is bad. Don't do it. bad design. Don't do things like that.
So 7 out of 10 corpse hounds meet your approval.
And then there are 3 of them that are like, please make it so that I never have to have that head on anything. Just awful. And it's a shame because the rest of the body of that wolf, of the dire wolf, looks great. But
all you gotta do is you gotta get a little sandpaper, you sand it off, and bam, you don't have it anymore.
There you go.
No, and that's exactly what I would wind up doing too. I've
done that with models before. I just take some my modeling sandpaper from my model kits and just
cannot
sand shit off.
Cannot stand it. It drives me up the wall when I see this shit.
I'm glad that you've focused on such a big and overarching part of the model line.
I know. And it is. It's very dumb. It's a very dumb thing to get hung up on, but it's just like, once you see it, I don't think you can unsee it. Like, it's just like, oh, yeah, that, it does look like a mask.
Yeah. Hey, listen, if we're going to pay upwards of $60 probably for 10 plastic dogs, we have the right to critique very little parts about them.
There's no way they charge $60 for this.
Oh, sir.
I guarantee they are $60 for these 10 direwolves.
This is the fear. This is the fear that has been coming for us death players, because our stuff is pretty cheap. Like, a box of skeletons you can get for $25 for 10. Like, there's a good value to collecting death. And I feel like all of these new models are going to make that, I hope not too much more expensive, but seeing what they did with Night Haunt, with how expensive that army is, see our other episode, find out how expensive it is. I'm really worried that they're going to be like, hey, here's 10 zombies for $50, but you need 60 of them, you know, because these are all horde things. These are all very cheap units. So that's the one part I'm worried about with this whole thing, is that with the new kits, they're going to be like, well, why not add another $15 on them?
Yeah, we're gonna clip this. We're gonna play it like at a later date in like a month. We're gonna be like, right. We were all wrong. They're actually 85.
Yeah, I'm gonna say 40 at the most.
I would love 40. I would love 40, and I'm hopeful. And I will. I do like, not related to the price. I do like that the models, while they look really good, the new direwolves, the old ones didn't look awful. So I think you'll be able to have them mixed in, and it won't look terrible, which is good because I've already got, I think, 30 of the old ones somewhere. So I'm closer to my dog army, but they won't look like when you put the new Chaos Warriors next to the old ones, and it's like, whoa, these look like entirely different things. They'll at least be congruent.
We don't have any idea when their book is coming out, do we?
No, it'll be after Kragnos. People, guaranteed. Yeah, yeah. And people are thinking it will be with the launch of the next edition, but let's get these next edition rumors out. People are going nuts right now thinking that the next thing they announce for AOS is going to be AOS 3.0. And I've seen so many rumors on everything from, oh, the table size is going to change, to, oh, there's going to be reaction CP that you can spend to do reactions when things charge or run. There's going to be no more battalions. I've seen that one. And like a collective word to the internet, everybody take a deep breath. Nobody knows anything. Like all of these confirmed rumors are from sources that a friend of a guy knows from Reddit, because he read it one time. And his, you know, his profile's 4 hours old or something. It's like,
don't you actually know someone that works for GW?
Yeah, we have the people that do the shipping and stuff, like the orders, the allocations, and all that. That's how we know, like, what the allocation issue, what's going on, and how we had some kind of hints on stuff like the dogs, because they took the old direwolves off the order forms, basically. Yeah, we've seen nothing that would indicate a huge new release, at least on that side. And when AOS 2.0 came out, it didn't really, I mean, it changed some things, but it didn't, like, reinvent the game.
Right.
And well, I think people are thinking 3.0 is going to reinvent the game, and it's like, probably not. Like, it's probably going to be a couple of little changes, and that's it.
I mean, I could see them changing the board size, definitely, because I don't think that's a big enough change.
I think the board size to make it equal to what 40K has makes the most sense, because then all their games are on the same size table. They can sell the thing they're doing with 40K now, where they sell you a mat that is that exact size and terrain for that size game.
Yeah.
Like, it's a smart move. They'll probably do that. My personal thought is that shooting, you'll no longer, if a hero would be affected by Lookout Sir, you can now no longer target them for shooting, not just the -1 to hit. That would change everything about the shooting meta, at least in terms of how easy it is to just kill heroes initially, you know. And I think that's how 40K does it, so makes kind of sense for them to do that rule.
I would also like to be a rumor quasher in this go round. Let me tell you, for the last year, since we haven't really been able to play anything, I can pretty confidently say there's not going to be major rule changes, like, in the how the game properly functions, because there hasn't been anybody to play test it.
Right. Yeah, they haven't. The stuff they're putting out now for Broken Realms isn't even going to be fresh off the table if third edition really is coming out in a couple of months. And I feel like if they're doing drastic changes, why would they do that?
I mean, to be fair, if they were playtesting it, they could easily just make people sign NDAs to our playtesting.
Oh, the issue is, where are they playtesting at?
Yeah,
in the last year, because a lot of that stuff is going to happen probably in Europe, and Europe's been more locked down than here.
Yeah,
so
I get that.
There's no one to do it, because there's nowhere to do it at. Like, unless they're doing it just in house, and I don't even think a lot of them haven't even been like in office, because they're not essential.
Right. Yeah.
Maybe they've been playtesting on what's that?
Tabletop name? Simulator?
Yeah. Maybe they've been playtesting on TTS.
I would love for Official Games Workshop to have to try to figure out how to play games on that. And they're like,
that would be amazing.
Knocking over models. They can't figure out how to turn them. Somebody's shark got disconnected from the base and now it doesn't work anymore. Yeah. So yeah, that's why we're thinking third edition. Some changes to fix things, quality of play, but it's not going to be an entirely brand new game where, you know, none of your War Scrolls make any sense anymore kind of stuff. They know too well. They've been taking stuff from this and applying it to 40K, so they're probably not going to suddenly drastically change the thing that's working. They'll just, you know, little fixes here and there.
Here's the real trick. AOS is selling well. Like, it just is. Like, it's selling very well. It's a popular game, so...
Yeah.
You don't break it when it's working.
No, absolutely. So yeah. Oh, and we got one more thing. You guys, we forgot about the most exciting part of Warhammer Fest Online Day 1. A mobile game battler that's looks like crap.
Yeah, let's go ahead and take a break now.
Yeah, okay. I saw that game.
I just learned to never get excited about a Warhammer game.
Yeah, there's one coming out soon Stormground, I think, that looks interesting. Like it's like a tactical kind of hex battler a little bit, from what I can tell. Like I'm like, yeah, I'll try it. I'll give it a shot.
I thought Chaos Bane was gonna be super good, and it was just
not good. It was so boring.
I mean, it was what it was advertised as, but it wasn't fun in my opinion.
Yeah,
as someone that loves hack and slash looters like Diablo and PoE, it didn't do it at all.
Yeah, no, I agree. It was boring, and it's kind of like, why would I play this when Diablo and Torchlight are right over there? Like, if I want to play this game, I got this game. Paths of Exile is another one that's really good. Like, I have this game, so I already have a better way to play it. But I don't have Soul Arena, which looks terrible, so we're not even going to talk about it. Go check out the video if you want. I mean, if you like Chibi Stormcast, I guess you're out there. Good for you. I'm sure it's somebody's thing, and I've made them very sad by saying that. Actually, you know what? I don't even care about the art direction. I just care about the fact that they were like, how did they pitch it? A new era for auto battlers? And it was like, okay, so a game you don't
already
play.
Out.
Yeah, cool. My favorite part of games is when I don't play them, so I'm real excited.
Now, is it like a idle game on your mobile, or is it more like the auto battlers that they have now, kind of like Dota has one, League has one?
Oh, I'm sure
where
it's...
you like buy units and those are fun. Those are actually like legitimately fun.
Well, I don't know. This is a new era. It could be anything.
Oh.
All I know is that it has Stormcast and a trailer that shows no gameplay. So there you go, Warhammer Games. And that's it for the previews. That was all for day one. It was pretty cool. A lot of cool stuff.
Yeah, if you're interested in the other stuff from Games Workshop, you know, check out the rest of the Warhammer Fest.
Yeah.
It's happening. Well, I guess by the time you're probably listening to this, it has happened. So yeah, go check it all out. It's on the Warhammer community page. Always plug that because there's a lot of good stuff there, guys. Like, there's a lot of great stuff that you can see and read the rumors with us and check it out and, you know, start the discussion. And if you want to do like more discussion and you have thoughts on these things, you should go to our Facebook page.
You should start fights on our Facebook page, but don't start like actual fights, but like come in with hot takes. Tell us how much you think the Mother of Nightmares is the best model they've ever put out,
and
right next to the original Razor Gore. Yes. And we will doubt your sanity, but still accept you anyway.
Yeah.
So, done with the previews. We got this big book here. I think we got to crack it open. This book has been over here just simmering in a black miasma of haze. I think we need to crack this open and see what's going on in here. It looks pretty evil. So let's take a quick break to get all of our salt and evil wards set up. And we're going to dig into Broken Realms Bellicor.
Starting your own podcast is easier than you think with Blueberry Podcasting, the official home of Atlanta Warhammer. Not only do they make uploading and hosting audio files a breeze, they also feature full WordPress integration, so you can easily share your podcast with the world. All Blueberry podcasts are optimized for Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, and about 100 other podcast services. They even have a free tech support and downloads, and with no contract, you can cancel anytime. To get started today, visit blueberry.com. That's BLUBRRY.com. While you're there, use the code ATLWAR to get 1 month of premium hosting totally free. Once again, that's promo code ATLWAR at blueberry.com. Get your voice heard today.
Welcome back. We are here talking about Broken Realms, part 3, Bellicor. The latest Broken Realms, part 2. I think there was a little extra content spin-off series in there somewhere. A solo, if you will.
We'll get to that later on.
Yeah, we'll get to that later on. But so this is the third book, physical book, in the Broken Realms series. It is... We haven't really talked anything about it yet, spoiler-wise, so let's go ahead and do our traditional patented elevator pitch, spoiler-free review. So, one or two sentences, what did you think? I'm not going to go first.
Cool. Then I will. It's great. It is genuinely great. It is a fascinating take, not just on how the world of Warhammer has shifted, but who the new players are, and some old players returning.
Perfect. I loved it.
Is it Grandma?
It's not Grandma, but...
It's Grandma Wolf!
We'll get there, man. We'll get there.
David, give me your elevator pitch. Sell me on this.
We got lizards and demons, and we got some rats... And dwarves. Dwarves come in.
Are you selling me on this book or in an apartment in Manhattan? I can't tell which way you're going with this.
Both!
Oh, okay. One comes with the other, and they're both the same size.
There's no kitchen. Or bathroom.
This is true. Well, there is a bathroom, but it's really more of a hole in the ground we never fixed. So
yeah, it's $4,000 a month.
Yeah, I was gonna say it's $1,700 a month, and we'll need 3 months deposit. All right, so let's see. One sentence pitch for me. Bellicor does some plans. A bunch of stuff happens. This book actually matters. I don't know if that was a haiku, but it was close enough.
It's very close, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. That's my summary of the book. So, spoiler-free review, it is, I think Marathi is still my favorite book of the series, but this one was really good. It would go Marathi, Bellicor, and then you would wait a few minutes and comically lower your hand to the ground, and then Teclis would be down there, mm-hmm. in terms of the quality of these books. And I think we said it on the Teclis episode, it's not even that that one is a bad book. It's just that the other ones are so cool that that one just kind of looks like a wet fart in between these two awesome stories. So, yeah.
Yeah. So, now that the non-spoilers bit have this been done, for the love of God, if you haven't gotten a chance to read this yet, and there's a very good chance that you haven't because allocation, it's been a little bit difficult to get your hands on it, but you can buy it digitally now.
So, on the AOS app.
We would encourage you, if you cannot get a physical book and you cannot wait, and because you desperately want to listen to this podcast, insert laughing track. I don't know.
Yeah. We'll edit it in post.
Yeah, we'll edit it in post. Then go read the story first, because there are genuine jaw dropping moments in here that are very, very cool, and we do not want to ruin them for you. Saying all of that, though, holy shit, y'all. Let's get into the spoilers.
Yeah.
We got things to talk about.
Let's get into this. So this book, a lot of stuff happens. It feels unlike the Teclis book. God, we're just going to shit all over that book today. So when you picked up Marathi, it felt like I was reading like a movie. Like it kind of flowed. You had your cool action sequences. This one feels like you're starting in the Empire Strikes Back part of the trilogy. Like, it opens with a big fight, and then it keeps going, and then things never stop happening. The most laid-back thing is an immortal having a spirit vision given to him by a dead frog. So, like, that's the low bar on wacky stuff that happens in this book. It's dynamic. There's a lot of back and forth, which I love. It's not super obvious, and it's not, you know, oh, this new model arrived and wins the day and you can buy it now. Like, there's none of that nonsense. It feels like a movie. It feels like this is a full cohesive narrative story that makes you go, oh man, what's going to happen next? Like, we're in a dark space right now when this book ends.
You know, it's perfect because the first chapter of this, like the first act, picks up right where a previous story in the Marathi book left off.
Yes.
So we're like, it is a genuine jump point from an element that happened in the book Marathi, and then we are following that story arc and seeing where it goes and who it leads to. And that is just chef's kisses all around for kind of narratively weaving us through how these stories are interconnected and what happens next. Because there's so much of that. There's so much of, oh my God, what happens next? I have to know. Give it to me now.
Yes. Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So, and the event we're talking about is, of course, Marathi using the anvils and her own army to break into the 8 points to try to get that sweet, sweet worm milk from Daddy Archaon's chaos worm things. So we pick up basically right as she has kind of taken the detachment down to do that part of the mission, which of course we know she actually steals all of the goop and uses it, the Varanite, and uses it to become kind of a goddess, question mark? We're still not 100% sure. But while she's doing that, you know, we have the traditional boy Stormcast. They're either doing two things, standing around or dying heroically. And we get a lot of the second one in this book.
Yeah, we do.
Stormcaster dying heroically around the Genesis Gate, basically trying to hold it off from chaos long enough for the mission to happen. And they are led by the legendary Gardas Steelsoul, so legendary he has his own miniature with a name on it. And he's been in a bunch of the stories before. He's escaped Nurgle's Mans twice. I think he is a little unrealistic in terms of how many things he has gotten through in terms of Stormcast. He's kind of one of those characters where you're like, all right, now he can't do everything. But he also dies a whole bunch, so I think that offsets it. Like, he's always the last one through the door, and he doesn't seem to make it through the door very often. So that's the kind of setup here. And these Stormcast are valiantly holding this gate. There's just more, I mean, they're in the 8 points, so there's just more and more demons pouring in, crazy cultists of the wastelands. Like, they're going to lose, and they know this. This is what the Hallowed Knights kind of do. They get, this is their job. But they get kind of a surprise guest that shows up, looks at them, and then leaves again. And who would that be?
The Seraphon.
Yay! All according to plan. The Seraphon show up, give a quick curtsy to their friends and order allies, according to the chart on the back of the book, and then they're immediately gone and back through the Realm Gate, or back through a different Realm Gate, basically just using this as a stopping point, kind of.
They were like ships passing in the night while one of the ships is burning to the ground.
Yeah, and the Stormcast are like, hey, it's our buddies. They're here to,
us. They're not here to save us.
They're not here to save us at all. And the Seraphon, of course, aren't malicious, but they are a cold and logical race. So they're going to do their mission, which doesn't involve helping the Stormcast, much to the unhappiness of the Stormcast, who are, you know, currently getting gutted and murdered. But yeah, so the Seraphon basically just drove past them, went through the Genesis Gate. Steel Soul is like, well, guess I'll go die fighting a great unclean one, and he accomplishes that goal, because he didn't look at his own war scroll before picking that fight, apparently. And that's it. That's how the story opens, is like Stormcast are getting killed, Seraphon go through this portal. As the reader, we're like, well, okay, what does any of this mean? And then we find out what it means, because then it turns into Star Wars for a little bit.
Well, you know, Steel Soul's got to get his rebirth on.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
And then, you know, he's got to go have a chat.
That's true. Yeah, he does get to have an interesting chat later on for sure. And this book, there's a lot of Seraphon stuff up front here. So the next thing that happens is we get this cool little story. Well, the Seraphon have basically launched an assault on a Silver Tower, which are the things controlled by the Gaunt Summoners, the Eyes of the Nine, which are... I think that's the something else. Well, whatever. There are, I believe, 9 Silver Towers. Am I right? I think right?
That sounds correct.
Yes, I think that's right. And there's 9 Gaunt Summoners, 9 Silver Towers. They are massive fortresses, question mark? They're really like magical anchor points. They're extremely powerful. Think of it like a wizard's tower that can basically do whatever it wants. And what are you going to do? Attack it? It's full of Tzeentch demons. Like, it's a pretty strong point. It's a pretty good strong point.
Oh boy, but did we attack it?
Yeah, the Seraphon go. You know what though? We got to knock that tower down. We got to bring this sucker down.
You know what's effective? Meteors.
Yeah. Yeah, so the Seraphon attack this silver tower, and the Eater of Tomes is the one in it, who I think is like the main Gaunt Summoner. He's certainly one that has been mentioned a lot in stories with Archeon. So he shows up, he's in his tower. All of a sudden, there's dinos everywhere. You know, that's kind of frustrating for him. He's like, well, this wasn't what I had planned, but maybe it was according to the plan. I don't know, Zeench. And all of his men are like, no, they're killing us. And he's like, oh. All right, I guess we'll leave. So he hits the convenient button on his silver tower, and it flies into space to avoid the Seraphon, because of course it does. And he thinks, phew, it's a good thing the Seraphon don't have, like, spaceships and lasers. But,
oh boy, but they do.
Yeah, so we get this weird for AOS, a spaceship battle. With basically the Silver Tower and these Seraphon, their big master temple ships, just kind of shooting lasers at each other, floating around. And eventually the Seraphon have landing vessels full of soldiers that they, I assume, just like slam into the Silver Tower because they don't have technology. They don't have like a docking system. So it's basically, hey, we're going to load a bullet full of dinosaurs and then shoot you with it. And it's pretty effective because... the Eater of Tomes is getting beaten pretty badly on his own.
Yeah, he
turf.
got a scale slapped for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. And he's like, well, listen, you're doing a lot of damage to me, but I don't want to. I'm getting out of here. Like, I'm not an idiot. I know which way the wind blows. And right now the wind is a whole bunch of Carnosaurs, so I'm leaving. And he teleports the Silver Tower away because that's the thing he can do. And you think, oh, well, we're done with the Silver Tower. I hope that'll come back up later. And it does, literally on the next page.
Yep. It falls into a Shaman, right?
Yep, and he goes to the Realm of Metal, which has a big, big part in this book. So he makes it, and he's in his Silver Tower. And he thinks this is, I think I might have mistaken the space battle part. I think this is when the space battle happens. Because he goes into the etheric void, which is the stuff between the realms, space essentially for those of you at home. And there's more Seraphon where he teleports because, of course, this was all part of the plan. Lord Croak knew that this would be where he kind of escaped, and so he had a bunch of his soldiers basically waiting here for them to show up, and they did. And another battle happens, and it's just. Man, it's just dinosaurs versus Zeench out there. Nobody knows. It's a very colorful fight. It is a fight that you could show to someone who doesn't understand this universe at all, and they would look at it and go, I have no idea what's going on right now. There are Aztec dinosaurs with bone claws fighting four-armed cotton candy monsters. Sure.
That breathe fire, or throw fire, or shoot fire.
Or just our fire.
Or just our fire.
Or just our fire. Yeah. Yeah, so Lord Croak has ordered the armada forward. The Eater of Tomes guy is like, well, I gotta get out of here. I cannot fight all these Seraphon. But unfortunately, they make the Silver Tower crash. Because he tries to... So the forces of the forces of the Seraphon... basically just beat his ship to death, essentially. I assume through lasers or magic comets or, I don't know, something like that. But they explode enough of it that his ship crashes, and it hits the surface of Shaman, and that's where the big kind of final part of this opening battle happens, which is a good chunk of the book is just this fight.
Yeah.
So yeah, towers crashed, right. Eater of Tomes. He's still in there, though. And even though the tower is crashed, it's not defenseless. So the Seraphon have to do one more push. And they luckily have a guy whose name is, I'm going to think, Ikto? Iktu? Maybe I'm saying that right? Who's a skink.
And not just any skink. Like, he's a very important skink because he's been the keeper of the old one relics. Like, he's kind of a big deal skink.
Yeah. Now he's
an old ass skink.
And he has been charged with a mission that he is aware is a one-way trip, but as part of the plan, he's going to complete it. So we're skipping over a lot of really cool fights, by the way, like the descriptions for this. We're just not getting into it because there's so much. But this is definitely a part you want to read and imagine because it's really cool. So Zeen's just fighting Seraphon. They're all on the ground. Chaos is everywhere. Then this guy, Ikto, the skink Star Warden, takes all of his, I guess, and I'm going to get the names wrong because I don't know Seraphon stuff, but the Bastillodons, the Engine of the Gods, the stuff that shoots lasers is what he brings. And it's that battalion.
Yeah. He brought he's running Thunder Lizard.
Right. So he runs those Thunder Lizards, and they go and just attack where the Eater of Tomes is. They have this kind of special ability they do where they essentially all of them fire like a laser. I imagine that like a beam of light hits one of them and it kind of focuses on all of them and then fires outward like a Death Star kind of beam.
Yeah.
Because what it does is it hits the Eater of Tomes and he explodes. Like, his eyes explode first and then the rest of him explodes, which is a nice detail. And when they do that, they also catch the Weird Flame font, which is it's someone trying to figure out how to write an engine into a fantasy universe. It's like, it's a Weird Flame font, and it propels them.
Yeah, it's a very Zeen-y thing. It's made of, like, flesh immortals and just shit tons of magic.
Yeah, yeah. So that also catches on fire, and the tower goes up in an explosion. And when I say goes up, I mean it becomes a nuclear detonation zone because people could see it from other realms. Like, it struck the ground with the force of a god's fist, which in the Age of Sigmar is something you can actually probably measure pretty accurately with the amount of times gods get into fights with stuff around here.
Yes, this seemed like a good Nagash fisting.
Yeah, yeah. This is roughly... please never say the phrase Nagash fisting again. this is... Wait,
Nagash.
Just pile fisting. In. Just pile in, man. Just pile in. So, yeah, this tower explodes. It causes a tsunami of liquid metal and, like, entire continents are just subsumed by this explosion.
Poor Tansus.
Tansus.
All 50,000 inhabitants gone in a flash.
Just whoop, they're gone. Yeah, that must have. Speaking of making Nagash happy, that's a good way to get a lot of souls for free. So yeah, this explosion created a crater thousands of miles across. Which, you know, it's funny, dinosaurs creating a big crater that wipes out a bunch of life, but I guess they don't see the irony in it.
Payback's a bitch.
Yeah. Get this, Pangaea. So, the whole area is destroyed, and the after effects of what this does, that's pretty big, actually.
Yeah, it's massive. They destroy a ton of rel gates within Shaman.
Yeah.
Correct?
Yeah, because they didn't, I guess we as the readers, maybe we knew this, maybe we didn't, but the Silver Towers are kind of connected to the Realm Gates, and all of the Realm Gates are connected to each other. And also, the purpose of the Realm Gates is not to just be a teleporter to another place. They have some other purpose, and Croak knows what it is. Of course, he's not telling anybody. And that's
part of the
other
plan.
Yeah, exactly. That other purpose is kind of hinted at a couple of times to where the teleport function is just sort of a nice thing they do. And when they start exploding, of course, that breaks the whole system down, which is a pretty bad portent for things to come later on.
But it is a profitable portent for things to come.
It is profitable. And that's how we end Act 1. It was a pretty cool act. Big fights. Just a constant rolling brawl that ends in a spaceship exploding and taking out a lot of realms. And
yeah, it was definitely a cool act. I definitely appreciated just the insane amount of action and just the descriptions of everything that happened.
Yeah.
Like, reading about
stuff.
A skink that falls into a hole of gibbering mouths, you know, it's a chef's kiss, you know?
Yeah, yeah. They know how to write the fight scenes in this book very dynamically and very well. And without falling into the kind of old, really what Teclis, we need a counter that just shows how many times I drag Teclis in this book. Teclis felt very much like, oh no, they got this, but then they got this, but then they got this, but then they got this. Like, a lot of the fights were like that, just kind of back and forth sort of things.
Yeah.
And this doesn't do that as much. There's back and forth, but it's not as obviously kind of scripted feeling.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the Teclis was more of, it felt more realistic, you know? In real war, there is a lot of back and forth.
Yeah. Yeah, but we have real war. I want to talk about dwarves and fart balloons that steal gold from the clouds.
Well, but what about some ghosts?
Somebody's got to come in and clean up the wreckage there and make a profit on it. All right, so
yeah, that's true. Well, before we get to the ghosts, we got a little side bit here, a little prelude to what's going to happen on Act 3. Josh, why don't you tell us about this last little bit here on page 24?
Yeah, this is just Endren Master Drongen Humboldtsson, who has come in with the Arcanaut frigate, the Redoubtable, which is a excellent Beric Zilfin sky vessel. That's one of like the prototypes. Like, it's a prototype for the new frigate that is like going to be the fastest, because of course Beric Zilfin is the fastest skyport. All the fastest things come out of Beric Zilfin. But yeah, they just kind of like have recognized that the Silver Tower has exploded. It is essentially changed the Aether Gold lines, and so because of that, they need to readjust where they're going to put their skyports at and where they're going to mine the Aether Gold, because that's what keeps their ships afloat. So if Silver Tower detonates and changes where all the lines of the Aether Gold are shifting to, it might be important to follow those new lines so that your skyports don't literally fall out of the sky.
Mm-hmm. I see nothing wrong with that, honestly.
You shut your whore mouth, sir.
It sounds like a lot of destruction.
So it's just like it's a little teaser. Because we will be coming back to Drongen Humboldtsson very soon.
Yeah. Yeah, we learn three important things about him. He is not a captain.
Nope.
He was put in charge because his ship is so state-of-the-art, they needed an Endren Master to essentially, I guess, keep it together and be able to... So we kind of got this Millennium Falcon thing going on, where we have the fastest ship in, like, the galaxy, This book, very Star Wars-y a little bit with some of his characters.
Yeah, it is.
So yeah, we know these KO, they love speed. They sense profit in the explosion of these Silver Towers. And also we're introduced to a character that I think is pretty important, who is an Arcanaut Gromthi, who's this guy, just this stark white-haired dwarf that shows up that no one quite remembers where he came from, but he's old. So
he's real old. He's almost ancient.
Yeah, he must be important, right? Yeah. I mean, I don't know who this guy is, but I figure he might come up later or something.
Yeah, he might do.
Nah.
Insignificant.
Act two. You know who comes up in Act Two? The guy that the book's actually called named after.
Yeah, we get into the big man himself. So, because we have commercials, let's hit a quick break, and we'll come back with Act Two.
Yeah.
All right, I have hit resume.
Counting you back in for Act 2 and Act 3 in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
We are back with Act 2, Death Pact. You know, guys, it's kind of interesting. We've got this book here called Broken Realms Bellicor, but like, what is that guy up to?
Who's Bellicor?
Who is Bellicor? What is he doing? Why do we care? If you haven't been a follower of, I guess, Warhammer lore for a while, Bellicor has been around for a while, you might not know who he is. So this chapter opens with a really nice little explanation of who Bellicor is. So the quick elevator pitch of the first Demon Prince, that's who he is. He was the first Demon Prince of Chaos. He claims to be. I actually guess we don't know 100% that he is. He was blessed by all four of the Chaos Gods. Yes, even Slaanesh before Slaanesh went its own way. And kind of was the leader of Chaos on the demonic side, or at least one of the prime leaders. He's a guy that even the big mega demons tend to listen to, because he generally, if he doesn't have a plan on how to kill you, he has two plans on how to kill you. That's kind of how he focuses on his job of ruining the mortal realms. He's certainly capable in a fight, but he'd rather play all the strings behind the actual curtain. And he's not a fan of this guy named Archaon, because Bellicor, he's not the ever chosen. He's not the currently chosen champion of Chaos. That is some dumb mortal human guy got it. And worse than that, Bellicor had to crown him as kind of a humility thing. So he's not friends with him. They don't get along. And they have very different views of how they run Chaos. Bellicor sees himself as a finely tuned instrument of, you know, scheming and assassination. And Archaon is a dump truck full of hammers that you drive into a problem until it stops being a problem. So they're very different. One other thing is that Bellicor he's immortal. He's a demon. So he is the king of playing that super long game. He's not going to rush into things very easily. And he has been playing the long game for a while. In fact, we find out that he was the one that saved Van Brecht from the ship.
Yep.
We had said vampires. We had said shadow demons from Malarian. We were all wrong. It was just Bellicor. So he's been playing this game since day one. He wants Sigmar to find out about Marathi, because obviously that's going to cause a fight. He's revealed to the Seraphon where the Silver Tower was from Act 1. So he's got some plans going on that are just all over the place.
He's been basically pulling enough strings to make it so that every Order faction, at one point all allied together, are now not really allies so much anymore. Very, very tenuous. Like, or in outright conflict with one another now. And it's
right.
It's been Bellicor all along.
It has been. Bellicor all along. And we should say that they've kind of had a back burner recently because there's some sort of new luminous beings instead. But traditionally, the enemy of Chaos is the Stormcast. Like, they were the ones that stopped the Age of Chaos. They were the ones that fought back all the horrifying things that Corgus Cull was doing. They saved all of the realms. I mean, they had allies, obviously. Mm-hmm. But the Stormcast were the driving force. And Bellicor, he knows that. And he sees them as the glue that holds all the realms together, which they kind of are, at least in terms of all the free cities. And he's got a plan that's going to make that he's going to get that glue unstuck. That's what he's going to do. So the first thing Bellicor does, we get some really cool scenes of him basically like in his domain kind of talking. They set the scene very well that Bellicor is a big spooky demon and that other demons fear him. He's a guy to be left alone lest you get caught up in his plans, and you might not even be able to help it. You might just be a part of his plans and not even know it. The thing is, the Bellicor, though, is he made, I don't know if it would be a mistake, but a long time ago, he struck down this creature called Lady Olinder, which you might know as the leader of the Nighthaunt. And in doing so, he seems to have gotten himself a case of the old curses. He's cursed.
Yeah.
Something she did to him when he killed her, he has a lingering magic on him. And in an interesting, kind of narrative thing, once again, not with I am perfect, techless, nothing bothers me, we see that Bellicor kind of realizes, hey, this spell is going to be a problem. Like, it's an immortal curse, we're both immortals, I'm going to have to deal with this at some point.
It's the one thing that he can't actually wait out, because death is the real, actually, like, the real eternal.
Yes.
Like, everything else is... You know, there's a possibility that it might not come back, even Bellicor. But death, no, that's... It comes for us all.
Yeah. In a way, they are in similar positions, because I guess if Lady O disappointed Nagash to a certain extent, he could unmake her. Well, he's currently napping. But when he wakes up, he could unmake her. And in the same way, I don't know that Bellicor could be unmade by the Runius powers, but I think if all four of them said no, he probably wouldn't exist anymore. Mm-hmm. So they're kind of in that same place where they're fighting for their Patreon. And Bellicor decides, well, he can't just wait out Lady O's curse, and eventually, like you said, death comes for everybody. So he just decides to attack Lady Olinder's home city, which is named Delorum. And he leads the assault himself, gathers up a huge army, and attacks, and the Night Haunt are like, really? what is your goal here?
Yeah, they literally were just like, what? What is happening right now?
Like, this city is so cursed that if you are a mortal and you step foot in it, you just die out of grief. Like, it's not like you're going to get resources or land or save people. Like, there's no reason to do this. And Bellacor does it. Of course, we know he's got to have some plan. So he attacks, and we get this nice little fight scene where the Night Haunt basically just murder a bunch of demons, and, you know, that's kind of what we all expected to happen. But Bellacor himself makes it to where Lady Olinder's body is, in, like, kind of her big chamber. And I guess I didn't realize this, that he threatens her body, and that seems to make her stop. So I didn't realize that the Mortarks, or I guess specifically her, kind of has that weakness of having that physical body. Like, that seems like maybe, I don't know, put that thing in a box. Like, I know it's in the middle of your city and it's well guarded, but after this, maybe, I don't know, put it in a box with a lock on it or something. Like, geez, if that's the one thing that can kill you, I would not leave it laying around on the kitchen table. But she does, and Bellacor shows up and threatens it. And essentially he offers her a deal to where he is going to do something that will kill a whole bunch of Stormcast, and if Lady Olinder will help him in his plans, she gets all the souls. And of course,
Lady O's like, wait a second, I can't have Stormcast souls, they get reforged.
Uh-huh. And he's like, oh, just you wait.
Just you wait.
You're gonna get yourself some Stormcast souls, which are, of course, a huge prize. There was a whole novel about them getting one soul in, I think it was actually the Soul Wars novel. And they got one Stormcast soul, and it, even then, forging it into a Death Knight, eventually it kind of kept going back to being a Stormcast, and so they turned it back into a Stormcast. So to offer that to her is like, oh, that's an offer. She accepts in the most just, I'm still going to own you later on way. She makes this giant hourglass appear and is like, well, this is the amount of time you have, and then flips it over and leaves. And I love that, like, Bellacor, this, you know, chaos demon leader of the legions of chaos, the first demon prince, and now this little ghost lady is like, cool, but I'm still coming for you afterwards.
It's a tenuous alliance, right?
Yeah.
Death and chaos.
It's a weird alliance. I wish that there were mechanically, like, some way to do this, although I understand it would be a nightmare of rules adjudication, but I like the idea.
Bellacor and Lady O sharing the battlefield, kind of. It's weird, but I like it. It's an alliance that is made out of mutually beneficial success, right?
Yeah. Yeah, and it's got to be pretty horrifying if you're, you know, average realmsman number 417 of the city, and on a good day you get to fight some demons, and now the demons have ghost buddies. And it's like, really? All I need is now the demons have ghost buddies, and also there's an auric riding it, and it's just everything that could possibly happen. Great. And it's full of spiders! So yeah, Lady O, the way they do this is kind of cool. She basically attacks just tons of places in sort of like strike modes, which diverts people, the armies, from understanding what Bellacor is doing. So he's kind of using the Night Haunt as a disposable sort of, distraction, which it makes sense. They're ghosts. What, they don't care. They can show up, do a bunch of fighting, scare a bunch of people, and then leave. And meanwhile, Bellacor, his plan goes into action. There's a nice part here, my favorite part, where the Lord of Change destroy a bunch of Lumineth Gardens. So, you know, payback. And all his demons attack all over the Realm of Metal. Basically, this is the focus of this whole thing, is in the Realm of Metal. And even some other demons are caught and, like, in this whole plan of treachery, demon against demon. Grand anarchy that transcends all hierarchies of command and servitude. So the way I think of it is, Bellacor kind of just restructures how the entire chaos system works for Shaman. Like, he's now in charge of chaos in Shaman.
Mm-hmm.
And most of the realm gates being blown up, no one's going to come in and challenge him for it, that's for sure.
Mm-hmm.
So he essentially gets it to where he controls all the chaos in Shaman, or at least the biggest army of them. And no one really knows what's going on because they're dealing with ghosts the whole time. Darn ghosts.
Gosh dang ghosts.
And then we get another story, and we're back to Indrid Master Humboldtson on the next page. I feel like I should just throw all the KO stuff to you, Josh, because...
Oh, well, thank you. God, I'm trying to remember. So now I'm actually trying to genuinely remember where in the story this happens.
Well, this is when they rescue their little their.
Oh, that's party. Right. That's right. Because one of the mountains is basically like sort of like blown up type of thing. Like the old dwarves, the fire slayers, are getting wrecked. Yes. And they come in as sort of like the Redoubtable and some other Beric Zilfin ships kind of come in to save the mountain dwarves from total annihilation on all fronts. And because of that, they're getting a whiff that some things might not be quite right about what's happening, because this dwarves are a perceptive lot, I know, strangely, but they are. And especially the KO and the Beric Zilfin ones, where they're just like, something doesn't smell right here.
Mm-hmm.
There may be something else afoot. We need to sort of reorder, like get all the big sky ports back together and have another conference.
Yes.
Essentially, yeah. Decide on what to do.
A big meeting of everybody.
Yeah. So, yeah. And
we get a little more prompting here for old Gromthy. That guy just keeps popping up for some reason. Who is that guy? He's here. We get a nice little story where he's kind of talking to Humboldtson, who's, you know, way more about, I mean, he's a KO. He's way more about the profit out of this whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
But now you can kind of see, okay, now you got some Fire Slayers on here who are still very mercenary in nature. But these Fire Slayers are ones that had already sworn the death. This is not the right word, but the oath that basically says we're going to die fighting.
Yes,
we've given up on being a society. This is it. So they're all ready to go and die fighting. And I like throughout this story, we get these little side parts where it's like you can tell it's building to something.
Mm-hmm.
Like now these characters have a bunch of Fire Slayers on their boat. I wonder what's going to happen next. And then what happens next is something that I completely did not expect at all, which is Gardas Steelsoul goes on a spirit journey. Dead frog gives him.
He goes on a vision quest because he's really pissed off about this, about the Seraphon not like helping him out, like not staying to help the fight. And he's like, why? I need to know why. So he settles himself down and has a spirit journey. His vision quest.
He goes to this place where the summit where he knows that there's an ancient shrine here to Dracothian, who's kind of the big grandpappy of dragons and star drakes and whatnot. And so he sits there and he meditates. And eventually he gets a signal, a light shines from above, and he just starts to wade into the lake. He kind of, I guess, disappears under the lake. And then he's just traveling and he's just kind of walking the cosmos until finally he meets a giant dead toad on a chair, Lord Croak. And he does exactly what anyone should do when meeting a deity. I love how all the Stormcast in all of these books, like every other character when they meet a deity is sort of humbled and falls to their knees. And Stormcast are like, I'm still going to punch it though. Like they have no respect for deities whatsoever. So he basically goes to Lord Croak and it's like, aren't you guys supposed to be good guys? Because you know what you are is a bunch of poop jerks. And Lord Croak is like, just ignores him and shows him without speaking visions of all these horrible atrocities of this city burning, the walls of Excelsius, the city of secrets, which is where we know Kragnos is going,
mm-hmm.
Laid crumbling and smoking. They show him just the Stormcast dying and just being bodies, just not forming into lightning. And after that, he's like, okay, well, you're showing me this. What does it mean? And then Lord Croak sits there and he goes, okay, well, we got to go to Excelsius because that's where you show me and I'll get the Hallowed Knights together. We got to stop those greenskins. And Croak, you got to come with me because clearly we should go together. And Croak gives him a one-word response, the only word he says the entire time, which is...
I was going to give it to David since he's a since he used to play Seraphon.
I don't remember the word.
The word is...
It's no!
It's no!
I figured it was no, but I didn't want to get it wrong.
He whispers one word, moist.
Moist. And...
I mean, when I'm whispering one word, that's usually the word I pick.
Yeah. That's if I were a mortal frog god, I would do that. I would just give people crazy spirit journals, and then when they got to the end, just look at them and go, it's all about the peanut butter, and then send them back to their homes. Figure that out. But no, he doesn't. He's Lord Croak is not moist. He's decidedly very dry and dead, and he just says no. And Steel Soul now sees himself looking at Vindicarum. Where his brother hosts the Vindicators are from. The naming convention's real simple here in the Age of Sigmar, folks. Try to keep up. And he sees that under attack, and then he knows that's where he's supposed to go. So that's our little side story there. We got Gardas, he knows what's going to happen, and he's heading there at some point. And then we get to the Shadow War, which is, I think, right before Act 3? Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, so... On this one, we learn a little bit more about what Bellicor is kind of trying to do here. And I like there's a little call out for the what are they called? The little floaty fly things from Warcry. They're just like unaligned chaos demons. I cannot remember what
the Furies.
Yeah, Furies. I like that they point out that Bellicor uses them because it is. They visually kind of look similar, and I think that's a nice little touch to kind of give Furies a reason to exist. So he kind of uses them as spies, because they're seen as flying rats by the other demons. No one even really likes them. And therefore, no one pays attention when they, you know, spy on stuff. But Bellicor is remembering that he's only got a little bit of time here before Lady O does whatever that hourglass is going to do when it flips over. He goes on the attack. And they attack at the Gate of the White Gold, which I thought was really cool. It's this place where, as over the years, the skeletons of these palaces and forums and stuff, they have been coated with, like, a metallic crust. So think, like, how snow builds up over time, but just with metal.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, Realm of Metal's a weird place. But I thought that was really kind of an interesting visual. So everything has been covered up by this kind of probably white gold-looking stuff. He attacks the Free Guild there, the normal old human guys. They try their best, but what are they going to do? They got zealots, they got soldiers, they got axes. Bellicor has an army of demons, and it kind of barrels through them. Like, I don't know about you guys, I didn't get the sense that he had too much trouble here in the beginning. They were a little surprised that because Vindicarum is the most zealotous of all the cities, that their actual belief was kind of forming into a physical way to fight the demons. But overall, they're still demons, and there's still, you know, thousands and thousands of them. And they break through the lines.
Mm-hmm.
And we should mention they've got... let's see, where are the names real fast? So his corn demons, Bellicor's corn demons, are led by Karzakos. He has a Nurgle demon, Gebolax. Great name. And a Lord of Change, Fatinax. It's Zinch, man. F and apostrophes where they don't make any sense. So he's got three big demons. This, by the way, this is a really cool looking, like, visual army that you can actually build with these three big demons. Because the White Dwarf has stats for them that came out last month? This month? One of these White Dwarfs has stats for the Lord of Change and the Khorne one. Not for the Nurgle one, weirdly. I guess he doesn't matter as much. But so he leads in, and, you know, everybody dies kind of what happens. Like, the city's defenders start to fall. Vindicarum, it's under attack by so many different angles that they don't really have a good strategy. They basically just form up Liberator shield walls. They hold the inner lines, but Bellicor is pushing his way in.
And Billicor, I will say, has also mentioned that he has made one other deal to make sure that this Gate of White Gold falls.
Yes, yes. And that deal comes into full fruition right now, because while they are still winning, they are not winning very fast. And Bellicor's on a time limit here. And by the time they get to the Star Drakes and the Dracothian Guard, they actually start to seem kind of like they're losing a little bit. Lord Kazarkos, who is the Bloodthirster, kind of gets his... He doesn't... Let's see. Does he die here? Is this where he dies? Yes.
Yes. Yes, it is.
This is where he dies. Killed by a Lord Celestant Arn Stardrake. He goes one-on-one against him and suffers and explodes. So
because of that, him dying, like, the rest of... It sort of inspires the rest of the people around that Lord Celestant to, like, fight stronger and harder.
The yes.
problem is that there's something happening beneath the lines that that Bellicor has already set into motion.
Yep, because while this is all going on, we have a quick little side screen here. Camera wipe, pan. We're inside a silver tower. And Skaven are there. Yeah, it's Skaven. They haven't done anything. Yeah, they haven't done anything for, I don't know, two books now. Might as well come screw something up. Except this time they don't. This may be one of the rare examples of a fully successful Skaven mission in the lore, and with no side effects that were not planned for.
Yeah.
That's how good Bellicor is. He figured out how to use the Skaven correctly.
Because they do. They get to the center, and they plant a nice little device and blow this sucker sky high.
Yeah, so we've got the Star Wars space battle. Now we have the Star Wars detonate the core to have the thing blow up. Very nice. Very a lot of good action tropes in this book. So yeah, they blow up a silver tower by planting essentially a warpstone bomb on its core and detonating it. This is the second silver tower to explode, and man, this time Shaman does not handle it very well.
No, this is real bad.
she could take one, apparently. She can't take two. Yeah, so even though it cost him a lot to have to deal with the Skaven, this plan works because these portals, the realm gates, were already severely messed up by the first silver tower. And when Bellicor and when his soldiers blow up the second one, some things happen. What do you? Who wants to tell what happens exactly? A couple of big things happen.
Well, there's full on fluctuations across the realm, like the realm gate network, because all of this stuff is connected. So yep, and now yep. It's not connected anymore. So that's bad.
All the subway lines go down. Yeah.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. The Aethergold streams are going to get real messed up, as in they don't exist where they once were anymore.
Yep. 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 The Nighthaunt show up.
Yep, they sure do.
to help fight. So now the city is under attack by spooky ghosts and spooky demons.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
it's mm-hmm. a good thing they have all the Stormcast there.
Yeah, 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 that would be good. Yeah.
I'm sure that's not going to be a problem.
No, not at all.
At some point. Yeah, because Stormcast, they can still take all this. So yeah, now there is no chance of reinforcements. The Realm Gates They have been cut off, and they weren't necessarily waiting for reinforcements to begin with, but with the possibility entirely removed, this has now just become a fight of who's on the ground, for the most part. But, and as we're about to get into, actually, I guess that kind of ends the second section.
Yeah, like, for the most part. There's one other little bit here where Bellicor just needs to mention that it's like, this is where it starts, where the cursed skies and the hour of his ascension is near.
Yes.
Mm. I wonder what that means. Wonder what that means.
I don't know.
So, Act 3?
So, well, I guess, yeah, we should mention that the Stormcast, they're fighting the Nighthaunt. The new Nighthaunt, there is a little bit of the new Nighthaunt model shows up, and they actually scare the Stormcast, which is, you know, probably pretty impressive. But here's the thing, the problem is that when it was done, at the end of the Brotherhood came swiftly, yet their agonies would last eternally, for not a single Stormcast soul escaped the battlefield of the Gate of White Gold. Whoops.
That's not good.
Yeah, yep. So turns out that when he blew up all these gates, Bellicor somehow, either his magic or he knew this was going to happen, these growing clouds in the sky mean that Stormcast, they don't come back anymore. Their souls just kind of get sucked into the maelstrom. Or, in the case of here, get collected by the Nighthaunt and captured. But either way, they're not going to Azir. So now we're properly setting the stage for Act 3.
Yep.
Vindicarum is under attack by ghosts and demons. Stormcast can't come back. And most of the city is falling apart at this point.
And Bellicor got a big old army ready.
Bellicor hasn't even entered the fight yet. He's just watching.
He's just been waiting in the wings.
Yep,
Waiting with his wings?
Yeah.
Waiting in his own wings.
Bellicor, wings.
Wings.
He's waiting in wings. Yes. So that's the stage for Act 3, mm-hmm. which is the big act. Act 3 is basically just a fight, but we get a little bit before that. We get a little kind of pause. So we get two things happen real fast in the beginning of Act 3. Steel Soul, Gardas Steel Soul, shows up because you can still teleport in, but not out. And he shows up and immediately wonders if this was a terrible decision. Mm-hmm. Because not only will death mean something for them, Vindicarum's already kind of a lost cause at this point. And it's not his favorite city. It's full of the kind of zealots that, you know, oh, you're looking a bit nurgly today, better kill your whole family. Like, they're definitely the most extreme of the Stormcast. And he's not, you know, super comfortable there. But, he shows up and goes, oh, this is a lot worse than I thought, but whatever. I gotta do it. And then, there's another meeting goes on.
Yeah, there's the second Geldrod of the Carrigan Overlords begins on the grounds of Maldralta, which is kind of a big deal. They've had this once before. It's when the Skyports were formed.
It's been a while.
And the code was ratified. This is the most hallowed of things for Carrigan Overlords, is it this particular place and all of these Skyports getting together and having a Geldrod. And the whole reason they're doing it is because they realize that over in Vindicarum right now, there's a lot of chaos energy that mm-hmm. is being unleashed and is about to descend on that place, and it is genuinely going to screw with all of their prophets.
Yep.
So they all collectively decide, well, yes, we need to do something. And of course, our most important person, Endred Master Humbledson, is sort of at the forefront of this, bringing all this information to all the various Skyport chiefs. Yeah, Skyport leaders. And they're like, look, this stuff that's happening hasn't been seen again since the breaking of the Spiral Crux, which is, you know, they're basically just bringing up all of these very important, like, Warhammer history lore pieces to explain how important this moment is. Mm-hmm. Problem is, they're Carrigan Overlords, so they have to all collectively decide on how to deal with it, and they can't.
Right, yeah, it says that Beraknar and Barak Zilfin favor immediate intervention because they don't want the Sigmar worshippers to be overrun, but the rest of the council is like, yeah, but that's fighting and we might not make money off of it.
Mm-hmm. We don't have a deal in place to go help them. Why would we do that?
Yeah, we've already lost some ships just to the explosion, you're right, Humbleson, he gets in there, but he's joined by that guy again. I mean, who is this Gromthy guy, seriously?
No, but he's old. He's apparently important.
And even though he's not supposed to be there, they listen to him.
Yeah, because he commands, like, an interesting amount of, like, respect and attention when he starts to speak.
Yeah, it's weird. And they don't even know why.
Yeah, but everybody listens to him.
Everyone does listen to him. So
probably not important.
Yeah, probably not. But he does raise a good point that the cataclysmic energy would draw in every Aether Gold stream within 10,000 air leagues. So essentially, go in, rescue the city, look like big damn heroes, and then on the way out, maybe become billionaires.
Yeah.
You know. Now the KO were like, hold on, we're back in now.
Right.
You didn't tell us that we could be rich and famous.
But we also do need to before we even get there, decide how we're going to divvy this up. So they got to ratify the agreement first before anything happens.
Back to paperwork, they say, and then smash cut to like a bunch of Free Guildmen just getting beheaded by a Corn Berserker or something.
Exactly.
Back to a KO guy like writing something. Oh, should we say in the effort of or in the efforts of? What does the code say? Smash cut to a Stormcast just getting like brutally murdered by a Corn Bloodletter just stabbing him over and over. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's the real battle was the paperwork we made along the way.
Hey man, Rome wasn't built in a day.
That's true, and it didn't do its taxes in 30 minutes either. So true. The KO are the KO are while they're learning about Schoolhouse Rock, what makes an amendment to be able to join a fight. We cut back to Vindicarum, and things are going great. And by that I mean everybody's dying.
Yes.
This is Avalgarde Part 2, except without the betrayal. This is just a straight up slaughter. Bellicor is like, he's standing there, just looking, watching the city burn. He knows that he's kind of like, he gives himself a little moment to be like, yeah, I'm doing this. The Chaos Gods, you know, they shouldn't have favored Archaon. They should have favored me. And after this, they're going to like me the best. Like, Archaon, what has he done for them recently? You know, it's all about Bellicor up in here. And so Vindicarum is just covered in demons. Garth Steel Soul is now in there. He's fighting Nurgle because that's kind of his thing. He loves to fight him some Nurgle. But the city is just, if you imagine a circle just growing slowly more and more closed, mm-hmm. that's what the survivors are dealing with.
I think my favorite part in this early bit is just like all the is like the flagellants who are at the very, very front, like in the outskirts of the city, that are all like, we got this, boys, with like their maces and clubs. Yeah. And it's like, oh no, you're getting just exploded. Like, you're just like, demons are just coming up to you and then you're just exploding on impact. All right. This is, it's bloody and gutsy and there's just bits of you everywhere now.
Yeah. This is a slog.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It's just, and it gets to be so bad that it starts to rain blood. So it becomes a Slayer song, and like they mentioned that there are immense craters filled with the blood that rained from above. The stench of death and burning flesh pervaded the air. Yeah, you know, it's a good day. It's a good holiday for Chaos here. Good vacation to Vindicarum. And so they pull everybody back to basically the curtain wall, the Iron Collar, which is sort of the central defense area. And the Vindicators aren't known for giving much quarter or having much in the way of niceties, so they've got a pretty good defensive center here. They know they're going to be able to hold for a while, but at this point, it looks like there's no point. Mm-hmm. You know, the demons are leading a full-on siege, and how do you fight a siege army that doesn't need to eat, breathe, wait, take a nap, go to the bathroom? Like, well, except for Nurgle, it's always going to the bathroom, but the other ones, you know, you can't tire them out, and there's nothing you can do besides sort of just wait for the inevitable. So that's kind of what they do. There's a lot of fighting. We get some really cool scenes where the Vindicators, there's two named characters, obviously Gardas Steel Soul, and then there's Lord Castellan Loras Grimm, who's actually been in a bunch of the books as well, and they kind of team up to fight. They've teamed up before. If you've read the Stormcast books, this is kind of neat to see these characters like have a part in the, I guess, the game lore. It's kind of weird to think of the books as like lore that exists beside the game lore, which is in the Battle Tome, which is different than sometimes the lore that's just in a White Dwarf somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so you get lots of cool fight scenes. They think that they are defended well, but unfortunately, there's this guy, a Tzeentch demon, Etrazan the Immolator, and true to his name, he's a fire guy. He loves fire, fires everything about him, and he sets all of their munitions on fire, which I feel like somebody somewhere would have pointed out that that was not a good idea. Like, hey, maybe we shouldn't store these all right here kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But if there's one thing flamers love, it's explosions, and yeah. That's how they breach that inner wall, is they just blow it up Lord of the Rings style by setting the Ironwell munitions on fire. And Bellicor just stands back and watches the explosion happen and is like, yeah, this is going good.
And then, after that wall is exploded, it's then that Bellicor unfurls his wings and sets forth into the city to join the battle himself, which is woof. What a time for the heavyweight champ to come out of the crowd and finish things off, right?
Yeah, he definitely waits until he has the upper wing before jumping into the fight. Mm-hmm. And when he does so, he slaughters. He comes in. I like the part where it says that their prayers are kind of painful to him, mm-hmm. Because you know it's kind of interesting. But yeah, he doesn't care. And the demons start to chant his name, which is interesting.
That's a heavyweight chant, man. He's coming down the aisle.
Yeah, they got the Belacor, Belacor. He plays his intro music, comes down the ramp. You got the sparks going off. Mm-hmm, you know, mm-hmm. he's here, and he basically strides out. Right now, the Stormcast are down to a small amount. They've got some human survivors. They're kind of just encircled, fighting for their lives. The demons fall back a little bit so that Belacor can walk out and drag forth Loras Grimm, the castellan from earlier. He's doing this in front of Steel Soul, of course.
Oh yeah.
And this is your perfect bad guy moment, you know. He's got your friend tied up beside him. I mean, like I said, this is a super cinematic book. Mm-hmm. So Belacor walks up, makes sure that Steel Soul is watching, and then he kills Loras Grimm. And of course we know
separates his soul from his body, just right on out of there.
And then and we know that his soul doesn't go away. It goes into, I don't know if it goes into his blade or if it just, you know.
I think the impression is it goes into the black miasma that has encircled overhead to prevent any of them reforging. But yeah, I don't know. Maybe it does go into his blade. Maybe Belacor is going to reforge Grimm into like his own personal like pet. Oh. Like pet prince, like he's like the second prince of chaos.
I know that if they did Dark Stormcast, people would be like, chaos space marines, But seriously, I would like to see maybe not a whole army worth, but like a Dark Stormcast hero for Slaves to Darkness.
Yeah.
A fallen Stormcast. I would, yes, please.
Where it's
give
like,
to me.
Where you'd just like have him and then like, it would be almost like be like a battalion. That could be like a part of Belacor's army, so it's just like, yeah, it's just
yeah. Well, we got cool ideas. GW, steal these ideas.
Make them happen.
Make this happen. Stop. Don't steal any of our bad ideas. Steal the good ones, like this. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So Grimm is dead, which I mean, he's been in a bunch of books too. So while that doesn't have the impact, I think, of like Arcan dying or Ambleguard, because mechanically there has never, as far as I know, been a Grimm, Loras Grimm. Figure, it is kind of, it's interesting, it's a narrative punch because this is a character that's been in a bunch of stuff so far, and seeing that Gareth Steel Soul goes nuts and he and all the Vindicators decide, you know what, we're gonna die, let's go out getting brawling, let's just do this, and they charge forward and Belacor starts just wiping the floor with them because they are Stormcast liberators and you know, look at the War Scrolls. Mm-hmm. Doesn't work out for him. Mm-hmm. But Gardas is just going for the Demon Prince as he tries to like fight his way through it. Because, you know, getting killed by a Great Unclean One a week ago wasn't enough for this guy. He's got to go get killed by something. He gets up to him, and actually they do fight. But Steel Soul just, he's not, you know, he's a big guy, but he's not that big.
Yeah, he's not going to take Belacor one-on-one to fight. Come on now.
No. And Belacor knows that. And so we get Belacor calling him an arrogant fool, Gardas saying, you know nothing of honor or sacrifice, monster, and you have not triumphed yet. And then, as he says those words,
off the top rope, come the Kerridren Overlords!
Yes. A single, I imagine just the clouds just part, and there's a single ray of light, and you get that, Belacor looks up, and he's like, "Urgh." And then we get the scene from Return of the Jedi / The Last Skywalker, or Rises, whatever the last one was, I don't remember, where every ship in the entire Republic shows up. Mm-hmm. Because, Josh, did they bring, was it one skyport they brought?
Oh, no, they brought.
To fight?
They brought.
Was it two? Was it two?
Oh, baby, they brought all the skyports. They brought every single skyport they had.
They brought the entirety of KO.
Yep.
Like, the faction.
The faction KO showed up. But not just the faction KO, but the faction KO also with Fire Slayers.
Yes. So these KO ships rocket out of the sky, start just blasting holes in these demons left and right, which, as we know from, you know, this is clearly the shooting phase, and what are demons going to do against shooting? They're going to get shot. So the KO, just they rocket in. They're blowing up stuff left and right. Even old Grumpy, whoever the hell that guy is, this just special Grumpy. He's like super good at aiming. He's making sure the explosions hit the precise parts to like destabilize all the enemy formations.
He is straight up picking out units and heroes or whatever he wants to just get shot off the board. It's absolute perfection.
Yeah.
Emphasizing the word pick.
Yeah, and so this I gotcha. This save that one for later.
Yeah.
A little foreshadowing. The KO come in and they're just wrecking face, and this makes the immolator guy, the Zinch guy, mad because he was busy setting the buildings on fire and now he's getting shot.
Mm-hmm.
So he goes after him. I think he tries to blow up some of the ships. There's a big old fight that happens. I love the way he dies.
Because
I think this is my favorite death. I don't know. Maybe my favorite death in the book is because he dies after they shoot at him a bunch. They just hit him with a ship.
Yeah, they just ram right into him, baby.
Like, just, well, you know what? Well, the ship is bigger than you. And they just hit him and kills him, which I love. I love that that's how they defeat him. And so while this is going on, we have that great scene of the chaos, the skies suddenly becoming freedom fighters. The people on the ground are reinvigorated by this because now there is a chance. And Bellicor is actually distracted because he didn't plan on the KO becoming a single united faction. Certainly did not. And so he's confused for a split second. And that's all that Garrus needs to stab him in the wing. And then Bellicor's like, hey, stop it. And just throws him off the platform.
Mm-hmm.
Like, so that big dramatic moment, you still can't kill Bellicor. But he's upset now. He's mad.
Yeah, the siege has been broken. It's over. Like, all of Bellicor's plans ruined. Well, most of Bellicor, okay, a part of Bellicor's plan has been ruined because the KO showed up.
Yeah, but he's not ready to give up yet. He thinks he still has, because all he has to do is beat up a bunch of Sky Dwarfs. So, you know, that's not that hard.
Mm-hmm.
So he flies to the sky. And yeah, we get a cool scene. Bellicor, he's big, and he basically flies up and just smashes the
Redoubtable,
some of the ships. He's unstoppable force of evil and chaos, and these ships are cool and all, but they're not on the same level as him.
Frigate's not gonna beat any KO ship is not gonna beat Bellicor in a melee fight. That's a terrible idea.
And he's landed on the Redoubtable,
and is now hacked a bunch part of the crew. And it's getting really bad, but oh man, this dude that we've been seeing a bunch, Bellicor takes like one look at him and is like, nope, getting the F out of here.
Yeah, so we get Humbleton attacks him, tries to fight him off, shoots him a bunch, and Bellicor basically just becomes smoke and teleports around and beats him up.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, once again, know your point value, kids. You weren't going to walk out of that one. But then through the smoke, he notices the Demon Prince is watching someone else, and there comes Grumpy, who is now taller for some reason, slightly taller. He seems to be, he has some sort of glow. It's very hard to tell, but for some reason, Bellicor seems afraid of him.
Yeah, he's got like that flicker of fear. He's like, oh, I'm not doing it. No.
And in the grasp of victory, in the cusp of having destroyed the entire city, because eventually he might have been able to beat the KO with just enough time, and I mean, he has demons, they'll keep coming back, and he was doing pretty well. But even all of that, he leaves. Bellicor looks at this new guy, says, nah, dog, I'm out, peace.
Gotta go.
And he's out. He backflips, does a cool backflip, and flies away. I don't know that he does that. But he does, basically throws the frigate and then spirals up into the skies, and then he's gone. And that's it.
Yeah.
That's the Siege of Vindicarium. Of course, there's a little bit afterwards, of course. These Broken Realms books, they don't just give you a story. They give you a little bit extra at the end of the story.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Little something. And we get to the extra here, and Vindicarium, it's funny that they're like, hey, we saved the city, and I imagine the character says that right after, like, the last remaining house collapses.
you just see the roof, like, falling behind him. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure glad we saved Vindicarium. Slow pan over, like, this bloody wreckage with, like, there's nothing left. They even say that they saved some people. But, like, in terms of a victory, this was a victory for Bellicor, even if he didn't kill every last person to the man.
Oh, especially because that black miasma is growing now.
Yeah, that's the other thing, is this anti-Stormcast storm is spreading through the realm gates.
And
that was the impression I got, at least.
Yeah, that's the impression I got as well. And it's spreading so well that even Bellicor is surprised at how effective it is.
Yep.
Which tells you that it is... guys, I think Stormcast might be in a lot of trouble.
Yeah, this does seem like we are in the dark middle part of the trilogy here for the old Stormcast Brigade.
Mm-hmm.
Because now they don't come back if they're near one of these clouds. I mean, they still do if they're not near one, but with half the realm gates being down, the other half being unstable, and now this cloud coming out of some of them, it's getting a lot harder for Sigmar to send his troops places. Which is playing into Bellicor's long-term plan of just isolating and cutting off these areas from the Stormcast. I don't know, maybe Bellicor didn't read the last book. Clearly he needs to worry about the Lumineth more than anything else.
Mm-hmm,
he's picking on Stormcast, and, you know, they've been rocking a solid 0/whatever score for a long time now. But, yeah, Bellicor kind of goes back, licks his wounds a little bit. He kind of tries to tell himself, well, you still did a really good job. But he's haunted by the mocking laughter of the Runius powers, because he promised to deliver Vindicarium, and he didn't do it. And they think that's hilarious, because, hey, look, he failed again, just like when he wasn't the Ever-Chosen.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm sure Bellicor will never do anything else about that.
Oh, no, absolutely not.
Last we've heard of Bellicor for sure in this series.
And, you know, he's certainly not, you know, still a little bit spooked by old Gronthi that he saw there, either.
Yeah, yeah, whoever that guy was. Yeah, but,
which and, weird, you know, is, you know, Gronthi's got to have, like, a little conversation then with old Hubbledson as well.
Yeah.
To wrap us up here.
Yeah, it does seem like Gronthi is more about bringing all the dwarves together for some reason.
Yeah.
You know, instead of just worrying about the money and that kind of stuff. But who knows? Who knows who that guy is?
But you know what this means, right?
What does this mean?
We have to be getting a new Stormcast chamber here soon.
We absolutely have to.
They got their teeth kicked in, and now Sigmar's going to be like, oh, I know how to fix this. I'll open up a Stormcast chamber. They know exactly how to get rid of the miasma.
Yes, I have my anti-miasma chamber right here. It's just a Stormcast with a Doppler radar. He can tell me wherever the storm is.
It's Kurt Mellish.
See, it's Stormcast in front of a green screen.
Perfect.
But yeah, so the Vindicators are gone. Like, the chamber is pretty much just gone. Which is the first time this has happened. They've been reduced before, but, like, that's it. And they can't come back, so there you go. You could, of course, still play them, but, you know, that's kind of a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
Big changes. Big things have happened in the story-wise here. So let's, before we hop into the rules stuff real fast... Why don't we talk about, like, what happened in this book? Like, what do you guys think? We made it to the end.
We have made it to the end.
It was a fantastic book.
Yeah. It was a wild ride.
Yeah, most certainly. I mean, that it had a little bit of everything, right? Like, we got... we joked about this on Monday when we tried to record. And now we're actually talking about it today, because I want to bring this up. But when you have... For, like, story purposes, you've got Marathi, and then you had Teclis, and now you have Bellicor. There is one of those books that really, really looks like the awful, like, middle stepchild of the rest of the books. It's like,
absolutely.
Something does not belong here, and it's certainly book Teclis. But, yeah, I mean, the book, like, for me, I know, Zach, you had said that you liked Marathi the Book Marathi more than Book Bellicor. I'm on the Bellicor side of things. I thought
Bellicor.
Yeah, this all the way. This book was fantastic, and I mentioned to both of you in the group chat as well. But as I was reading this book, it actually made me want to get the Bellicor model and play with Bellicor and his associated Chaos faction. I do not own a Chaos army. Like, I don't own one currently because none of the Chaos armies have ever spoken to me. I might look at doing a Chaos army that is centered around Bellicor because of this, because there's something that spoke to me about, like, his story, and he just oozes the cool, man.
He's like old school cool, man. He's a 80s heavy metal hair album cover of a model. Definitely oozes cool. And hey, listen, from what I understand, his Legion isn't half bad either in terms of an army. So you know, good place to start. Plus, you get to just run demons, which to me, that's, I like Chaos. I like a lot of the army, but man, the demons are just, they're fun. It's just fun to do that.
Demons are just neat.
I was honestly sad that I wasn't able to get in for a pre-order on Bellicor because I was really looking forward to them. But now I'm glad because I can buy the Centaur Boy.
Oh yeah. Yeah, that's they've put out a lot of big centerpiece models for these books.
They're doing a great job. Not gonna lie,
they are doing a great job. I mean, this book, when I was reading it, I was like, yeah, I don't have Seraphon or Tzeentch, both armies I'm not really interested in. So you know, I didn't want to just run and start painting that kind of stuff. But like, I got my little Guard of Steel Soul sitting right here. He's gonna get painted up here soon. Like, it inspired me. It's the thing that I said the Teclis book didn't do.
Right.
I didn't read Teclis, and then I was like, I want to go paint. I was like, I read Teclis and thought, okay, that was a book I read. This one I read and I was like, yeah, I want to go paint. I want to finish up some of my Cities of Sigmar stuff and, you know, maybe make a little Vindicarum army out of the extra Stormcast I have. Like, and this was cool. It inspired me to get back into doing that kind of stuff.
So can we talk now about Gromthy and who Gromthy probably is and what I hope that we might get at some point then, because I like dwarves.
Yes. Yeah. I think there, from what I have read, there are two big theories on Gromthy. One is probably likely and one is kind of a little out there, but could be likely.
Yeah. So Gromthy's Grungnai. Like
that's probably
that he's Grungy or he's Grungnai. I really would love to have Grungnai as an aspect, like, model. Like, you know, because you get, like, you've got, like, Slaanesh, who have, like, their, like, god creature type of thing. Well, I want the dwarves to have one. I want my boy with a pick to come in there and just, you know, I want him to be, like, the thing. Like, because what do I have for a centerpiece model other than...
Gotrek?
Yeah, I think Gotrek, yeah. Boruk Grungson, kinda.
Yeah. Yeah, a big ship.
Yeah, a bit like an ironclad. I mean, but I don't have like a model as like a that guy. That's the thing. So I would like that. That'd be swell.
I would love to see this turn into Dordan, like an actual Dordan faction, because I like Fire Slayers okay, and I like KO okay, but man, there's something about just dwarfs.
Just dwarfs.
Just dwarfs standing on the ground, having a shield and a hammer or an axe, just doing dwarf stuff, and if we can get a, you know, a Dwarven Alliance faction, kind of the Dispossessed, but an actual book, this is kind of pie in the sky wish, but that would be really cool, you know. Mm-hmm. Their god came back, now they're aligned under that, and they have kind of a purpose, and it would be really neat to see them broken out of cities, but still be able to be a part of cities, and I think rules-wise, that's pretty easy to do.
Yeah.
Just give us, like, a little, you know, give us a couple new dwarf models.
Dwarf soup! We got a dwarf soup army, then. That'd be cool.
Yeah, that's the other thing. It would be cool to have an army that's just, you can bring, if it has the Dwarden keyword, it fits in this army. So you can kind of run the alliance of Grungy. It'd be kind of neat.
Oh, that'd be great.
Yeah, well, there's always open play and narrative play.
There you go. That's true.
You can do whatever you want there. Just paint the hair on one of your little Arcanauts white, and we'll pretend it's a god.
And I know that I've seen it in the show notes that somebody has, that it has also been speculated that it's Grombrindle. It's not Grombrindle.
Yeah, that's the other other theory that people have been tossing around, that it is the White Dwarf, not the magazine, but the White Dwarf that the magazine is named after.
Mm-hmm.
That I don't think it's that one either. I think it's probably Grungy, but, you know, to be covering all the bases, we should say there is also that rumor.
Yeah.
But I definitely think it's Grungy.
Yeah, it's Grungy. Yeah. Oh, man. Other thoughts. David, you got anything else on this before we head to the rules section of this?
I want more Seraphon action.
I think you're going to get it, buddy.
What, 6 pages wasn't enough? Yeah,
I want more.
This guy over here.
Well, you might just have to wait until Kragnos, buddy.
I'm so excited for Kragnos.
Yeah, considering Lord Croak is who put him in the ground, I'm pretty sure the Seraphon will have to play into that at some part.
Well, Kragnos likes to beat up lizards.
That's true. He likes to beat up everything.
Yeah.
Kragnos is an equal opportunity butt kicker. He'll kick all the butts you got.
Like, Zach, you're going to have to help me get the pre-orders in for this stuff, because I don't know what happened last time with the Bellicor stuff.
So, well, yeah, completely separate from the story, GW is back to doing their allocation stuff where some stores are going to get, like, one Kragnos. So,
yikes.
Yeah. I have already said I'm not, as much as I want Kragnos for a Destruction Army, I'm not going to play the raffle to get him this time around, the Hunger Games. I'll wait, because, yeah, Destruction's I like it, but it's not my main army stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I'd rather somebody who is going to, like, use him gets him than me, because he just sit on the shelf for me and eventually go in my Bone Splitters or something.
I would definitely use Kragnos.
Well, yeah, I will let you know as soon as that pre-order comes up. So, GW is back to doing their goofy allocations, you know, like 2 or 3 books per store max. Or you can buy the Legendary Edition of the book, which is like $100, which that's a little much for me. A little much.
Yeah.
I like the books, but I think 40 is a good... That's the price I will pay for these books, GW. Don't you get crafty and think that you can bump it. 40's like, that's right there. I feel good with 40. Yeah, so I love this book. I mean, I think it's pretty obvious we're glowering over it. We like it. This is a good one.
Yeah.
This is solid work, GW. We're big fans. We didn't even talk about... There's actually not a ton of artwork in this, I noticed. There's mostly models.
Yeah.
Which I thought was kind of interesting, because the other ones have had a decent amount of artwork and then a couple of model shots. This one, I think the only new artwork are the Tzeentch and Sarah, like the stuff that's on the front of the box sets that you can get.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Otherwise than that, yeah, that's the one part where the book kind of lackluster to me. Oh, I guess the Bellicor picture is new as well, but I kind of wanted more cool artwork, less cool. I like the miniatures, but, you know, show me some cool drawings, too. But the miniatures aren't, it is cool. It is cool to see the Bellicor army with all of the different mega demons and stuff. Like, it's a cool looking book. I think we can all say that this book meets our approval.
Yes.
Thumbs up, go buy it.
Double thumbs up. When you can get a copy, get yourself one. Especially a physical copy, because, ooh, new book smell.
Oh, that new book smell. And if you absolutely don't care anything about the story at all, well, thank you for listening to the last hour and a half, 2 hours of the show. But we're going to jump into the rules next. And there's a little bit. We're not going to go page by page or anything. Everybody got a couple little updates and things like that. Some interesting stuff to point out. So if you're buying the book just for the rules, listen, like we always say with these things, maybe listen to the next part of the show and then decide if you want to spend the money. Because to be honest, sometimes with these books, if you only play one faction, you might look at the stuff you get and go, well, that's not worth $40 for one page kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to run you through it, see if it's a value to you when we come back.
Gigabytes Cafe in Marietta, Georgia is your one-stop shop for everything you need for your favorite hobby or fandom. They carry a huge selection of Games Workshop and other miniature lines, as well as hobby and crafting supplies to keep your forces looking great on the table. Not a wargamer? They also stock hundreds of different tabletop games, from classics to new releases, not to mention all of the CCGs, TCGs, D&D supplies, and any other nerd-based acronym you can think of. You can shop online 24/7, and they even offer a contactless pickup option. So what are you waiting for? Go to GigabytesOnline.com to start shopping now and take your game to the next level.
And we're back from them great commercials, ready to go, and we're going to start talking about some rules.
Yeah.
You guys ready for rules?
Yeah, man, there's quite a few rules updates in this here Bellicor book.
I tell you what I'm ready for. I'm ready to skip all of the pre-made battle maps and Path to Glory stuff like we always do.
Mm-hmm.
It's there. Read it if you like it.
Maps are not interesting on a podcast.
Yeah, not very much fun to listen to. So we're jumping straight to Bellicor.
Yeah, and Bellicor got a little bit of an update.
He got swole.
Yeah,
he got swole. He got bigger.
Yeah,
he got some new abilities. So Zach, can you tell us a little bit about Bellicor's previous abilities?
Right. So previously, because I have the Slaves to Darkness cards right here in front of me. Bellicor had a 12-inch move. He didn't have profiles before. He was just a little dude. Little 8-wound Demon Prince. He got made fun of because he's actually smaller than the current Demon Prince kit. So it's a little wee Bellicor. He's got 8 wounds on his old card. 10 bravery because he's a demon. 4-up save. He's ethereal, kind of, you know, ignores rend. His old ability, a lot of people are familiar with it. He would secretly pick an enemy unit on the battlefield. At the start of the, I'm sorry, after setup, but before the first battle round. And whenever that unit was chosen to do something, you would roll a die. On a 5-up, it successfully did it. On a 1-4, it couldn't do it. So your Nagash tries to cast a spell, you roll a 1-4, the spell doesn't go off. It was pretty good, obviously. And he also had, like, Lord of Torment, when somebody runs from Battleshock within 10 inches of him, you heal D3 wounds. That was kind of cool. And he had his spell. He's two casting wizard, no pluses, and his spell casting value is 6. Pick an enemy unit within 18, only within, not wholly within, so that's nice. Big long range on this one. And you would subtract 1 from wound rolls. So that's old Bellicor. That's the old one. The one that nobody cares about anymore. We're here talking about new hotness Bellicor.
Mm-hmm. He got bigger.
Yeah.
He's up to 14 wounds
bigger.
Now.
He gained 6 wounds. He gained 2 ogres worth of wounds there.
He did indeed.
Yeah. Yeah, so he's been working out. He's beefy. He has profiles now. He no longer has just 6 attacks, 3s and 3s, rend 1, 2 damage. He now, that is his main thing, and it is a starting point of 8 attacks, 3s and 3s, 2 rend, 2 damage. He's got a nice claw attack that does 2 damage, and a spearing tail that can do, that will probably do 2 damage, because my god, 2 to hit, 2 to, 1 to wound, I'm sorry, rend 3, that's a guaranteed hit, like, and that's a 3-inch range, so that's the thing that you use to, snipe out a hero that got a little too gutsy, got a little too close.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so his profile, he loses movement and attacks as he goes down, as you do with profiles. So he's a little bigger. His Dark Master ability has changed. Now, what happens is, at the beginning of the phase, like, you already still have to pick the unit. This is very important, rules clarification for those of us Lightning Boys out there. You pick one enemy unit on the battlefield. So Stormcast players and other people that can put stuff in reserve, if you know you're fighting Bellicor, be smart about it. Don't give him your Star Drake on the first turn, because he has to pick something that's on the table. Make your Bellicor opponent pick some birds. Dude, it's funny that Stormcast have like the ultimate weapon to this, which is just, nah, just pick some birds or a dog maybe. I don't know.
Well,
like, what do I care?
Well, it's not the whole battle anymore. Now it's just, it's one enemy hero phase until your next hero phase now as
yeah,
well.
Yeah, you pick before the battle starts still, but the unit you pick has to be on the battlefield, so...
I don't think it has to be at the start of the battle, does it?
Yeah, you pick one enemy unit
at the start of the enemy hero phase.
Oh yeah, you're right. So it's not before the game; it's before the start of the phase. So it does give you a little more flexibility. But once again, if you're a Stormcast player, you can hold some stuff up and try to make them like think if they should use it or not.
Yeah, if they got to wait on it. So yeah, it becomes a little more tactical, right? Like there's still the game of chicken that you're sort of playing with against Stormcaster, with Bellicor, whatever else.
Yeah, absolutely. And we should say also, for the phase, you roll a dice for that unit. So just one dice per that phase. And on a 3-up, The unit cannot move, shoot, fight, command, chant prayers, cast spells, dispel endless spells, or attempt to unbind. So essentially, do anything, really.
Yeah, it's just done. Like, for each... Yeah, it's just done. Like, if you roll a three up, it's like, all right, cool. Well, that model does nothing.
Yeah, so this is real deadly to stuff like Nagash, Teclis, Croak, where you pick that model, and for a whole turn, that model is got a 66% chance that it's not doing anything. Mm-hmm. Like, it's just,
yep,
just hanging out, being worthless. And when Archeon just stands around being worthless for 840 points for a turn or whatever he is, that's going to hurt.
Yeah, well, and especially, like, if you get, the thing that gets me on this is it's so beautiful for if you're worried about the dreaded double turn. So, if, they go and you're like, all right, well, either I need to go or they're gonna double turn me, and that's not great. But because it's not until the start of your next hero phase, if you get that double turn, that thing's still on. Like,
yeah.
it can carry over from round to round. And that, to have like two whole rounds where Teclis does jackal just sounds magnificent.
Yeah, and the threat of that ability, that's what I like about Bellicor, is the threat of his machinations is going to keep the other player on their toes. Because they're not going to know, okay, is he going to do it now? Is it going to be, when is he going to pop this ability, and on who is he going to pop it? If you've got a list where you've got, Lord Croak or a Stardrake or something, well, yeah, that's going to be the thing. But if you're running a list where you got a lot of different heroes that are all kind of important to an overall plan, he's pretty dangerous because you don't know what he's going to take out. It's funny that he's actually would be probably pretty terrible against just a bunch of Skaven or something where you're like, okay, well, I got 30 units of 30 guys. So
yeah, who cares, sort of thing.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah. Kind of the old bone splitters problem. Just, okay, you did your thing, but there's too many of me to know what's even going on.
Yeah. But any army that relies on like combos or like multiple things to happen in order to do that thing, like Bellicor is just a hard like iron wall that just kind of drops in between like that Rube Goldberg machine that you're trying to get to happen on the table. It just ends it.
Yep.
So
he just shut down Kragnos. Just shut him down.
Shut him down. Shut him down.
Shut down that Mega Gargant. Yeah, he's cool. So he's got that, that ability it's the most changed, but it's still the same functionally, like not in the rules, but it shuts a unit down is what it's supposed to be, which is cool. His Battleshock healing thing got extended to 12 inches, which is even more extended because his base is so much bigger.
Mm-hmm.
So, really, that got a little better.
Yeah, well, assuming the Battleshock ever goes off.
Right, yeah, you actually have to have a game where Battleshock happens, which is a rarity these days, but I've heard it can happen.
Mm-hmm.
And he, it also, yeah, it's just any enemy unit, so I guess if you're smart, you can kind of try to figure it out, but honestly, that extra D3 healing to me feels like just a, if it happens, nice, otherwise, you're bringing him for his ability, and you're bringing him because he's a pretty good blender in combat, and he's ethereal, so he's gonna last a little bit.
Yeah, there's not. I don't think there's a lot of things that can fight him one on one, especially if you happen to get that off and you're already in combat with them.
Oh yeah, if he has shut down the thing, that's it.
Yeah, it's like, oh, you're just gonna take all this stuff to the face. Congrats, bud.
Yeah, in his 380 point bracket, like around there, because that's how many points he is, you're right. There's not a lot that can go toe to toe with him. I think when you get up a little bit into some of the higher ones, like I think Marathi could probably one shot him, just sheer damage output. Probably Archeon could too, because he doesn't have anything that stops auto kill, or mortal wounds, if you'll notice. At least not on his scroll. We'll get to that on the next page, how he stops those. But, He's squishy-ish, just because he's big, so, he can get shot a lot. But I really like that they kind of took that weakness of a big centerpiece model into account with his Legion of the First Prince ability.
Because
this is the faction you can bring. So you can bring Bellicor as a Slaves to Darkness. So David, he'll look good right next to all those Slaves to Darkness guys you just got. Perfect.
Yep.
Good thing you don't have to keep buying all these giant models that come out anytime, right?
Yep.
Yeah. Ha, now you know what it's like to be targeted by GW's money machine. So, yeah, you got the Legion of the First Prince. This is not Slaves to Darkness. This is its own faction. And this is, you can pick one. You can only include Chaos and Demon units in it, which is pretty cool. It's very thematic. This has already existed, by the way, in Wrath of the Everchosen, I think, or Forbidden Power. It was one of those two books. We already had the option to do this. And this is slightly changed, slightly not changed. I think this version of it is actually worse, I'm going to say. I don't know that that's a hot take. I may just be, everyone may be listening and going, yeah, it's obviously worse. But I never played the old section, so I don't really know what it is. But this one, real fast to go through some of the stuff. Bellicor gets a little better when he's near things. The interesting part of his rules is he has to be for his, he gets a shrug, a four-up shrug, but it says that you pick a friendly unit within 9 inches of him from either the War Scrolls, Bloodletters, Horrors of Zinj, Plague Bearers, or Demonettes. So your basic foot troops, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it makes sense. They jump in the way. They'll take some hits for him. That gives him a little more HP if you keep a pack of something around him. And it just says allocated. So if you keep a pack of Plague Bearers around him, then you get to roll Bellicor's roll for his save, then roll the save, the throw it to the Plague Bearer's roll, and then the Plague Bearers might just resist it.
Yeah.
So you should absolutely surround him with some Nurgle. That's his favorite thing, to have take wounds for him. But he also has this weird ability where he rerolls hit rolls when he's within 18 inches of at least one friendly unit from each of those falling. So you have to have all four for that ability to work, which to me feels like that's never going to happen. Like, that'll happen one turn, and then your opponent will kill something in your army.
Is it, wait, does it have to be, does it have to be within, what, one of each?
Yeah, while he is within 18 inches of at least one friendly unit from each of the following War Scrolls. So the way, unless I'm just completely misinterpreting that, which may be, wouldn't that mean that he has to have one of each?
So I would read that as that he only, that it just has to be, like, at least one of, from, just from one of those War Scrolls. Like, it just has to be from either a Bloodletters or Horror Siege, Plague Bearers, or Demonettes. I have a feeling that's probably going to get clarified.
Yeah,
in Narada.
Because it seems like in that case it would say, holy, when he's within 18 inches of at least one friendly unit from one of the following War Scrolls.
Yeah, so that's a good question.
Yeah, because if it's that way, it's way better. If it's the other way, it's not great.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that's, we'll find out on that one. He's got a Curse of Skies. If he's your general, you roll a dice for each friendly unit on the battlefield, which is the same four, the big four, basically. On a three up, you return D3 models, or if it's a Horrors, one model. That's nice, because, you know, if you got that plus your Battle Shock, you could potentially be returning a D3 plus D6 to your units,
right,
which could be nice if it happens. If you allocate any wound or mortal wound to anybody in the entire army, they get a 6-up shrug, so that's nice. You can't, of course, combine shrugs, so your Plague Bearers are still going to have a 5-up, which is better. And then they can still summon, which is kind of the thing they did last time. You roll 3d6 on a 10, you get to summon in 10 Bloodletters, 5 Horrors of Zinj, 10 Plague Bearers, 10 Demonettes, or Bellicor can pick any of those, or 6 Furies. And you pick them up, and they go, you know, standard deployment. And if you roll a triple, or a double, you take a mortal wound. And if you roll a triple, the hero suffers D3 mortal wounds, which I think would be hilarious, because I'm sure if I ever tried to do this, Bellicor would kill himself doing that ability.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, got some summoning. Here's where it kind of falls apart for me. The spell lore, each wizard knows a following spell in addition to any others. So this is where this kind of becomes the, this is clearly for fun faction. Because when you're bringing all these big demons, but you're not getting any of the spells from their book. Like, let's say you're bringing Nurgle. I'll talk about that, because I know a thing or two about old Goopy. If you bring Nurgle demons in this, you're not getting the wheel. And you're not getting all of those really good spells and really good artifacts out of Nurgle. The trade-off would be, oh, well, there's some really good stuff in this list, but there's not really. Legion to the First Prince doesn't have anything that makes you go, holy crap, that's amazing. Like, this command ability is pretty cool, because if someone is slain, they can attack. Only if they were slain by an attack made with a melee weapon, they can fight. before they're removed from play. So, yeah, that's nice. But if you're going the way to protect Bellicor, you probably don't have a ton of melee, like, nearby, if that makes sense. Or if you do, it's going to be like Nurgle, where it's kind of just, you know, pool noodles, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And same thing with the command traits and the artifacts. You only get three of each. Nothing in here, I mean, did anything in here really stand out to you guys as, like, oh, that's really good?
Yeah, no, I mean, nothing on the command traits or artifacts, because I would want Bellicor to be my general. Like that.
Yeah, that's the other thing.
Like, that's the other thing. Like, he needs to be the general to get to take advantage of, like, some of the other stuff in there, right? Like,
yeah.
So
yeah, there is no possible reason I can conceive of that you would want to run this army without Bellicor.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Like, you could do it, but why? You're just getting chaos soup at that point, and unfortunately, with how keyword-specific demons are, yeah, that's not gonna... You're not gonna have a lot of fun, I think. It would look cool. Like, I think if you own a lot of chaos stuff of different armies, and you want to put it together, or maybe, hey, you know what, maybe you got, like, a friend, and you want to do, like, a 2v2 or something. Like, this is a really cool faction to do that with.
Yeah.
I don't think we're gonna see it competitively, though, unfortunately.
Well, you just wait until I get my Bellicor, and I'm gonna start running Nurgle and some other stuff in there, I think.
Yeah. But I'm sorry, is that when we're going to see it competitively?
It's competitive in that I am bringing it to a competition.
Technically. I am competing with it.
Yes. So,
I don't know how to swim, but I'm in the Olympic pool during the Olympics.
On a sheer technicality, yes.
Yes, I will be playing.
Look,
it
just because I made my own country so that I could swim in the Olympics doesn't mean that I'm not just as important as all the other Olympic athletes.
I also don't know how to swim, and I'm overweight and I have asthma.
Oh my god, I'm drowning, please help.
I'm a sovereign country that needs aid.
Speaking of dying, how about Nighthaunt?
Yeah, Nighthaunt. So Nighthaunt, their rules thing, they get two processions, which are, you know, chambers, clans, tribes, whatever you want to call them. They get two, the Emerald Host and Reknor's Condemned. Real fast through these, the Emerald Host is all hex rats all the time, baby. That's what this wants to be. Your hex rates do more damage. Or, I'm sorry, do they prove more damage? No, they just do more attacks. So this list wants you with the Emerald Host to have the mounted Nighthaunt heroes, the horse guys, because they're going to let you have the command ability off of them, and a bunch of hex rates because you can shrug wounds to them. And you're going to have a big, fast mounted Nighthaunt army. I think this is cool. Like, if hex rates weren't kind of expensive and still kind of not great, the idea of a Nighthaunt army that is just a ton of, like, fast moving mounted stuff sounds really neat to me. Like, visually, I think that's kind of cool. This is kind of what you, this is what you would do if you want to do that. So that's pretty neat. I like that they're giving an option for, like, an all-cavalry Nighthaunt army. But I didn't expect it. And then Reknor's Condemned. This is if you've got Reknor the Grimhailer. He's the winged horse-riding mage guy for Nighthaunt. All it really does is it boosts your Chain Rasps, which are good, and your Glaive Wrath Stalkers, which are universally pretty terrible. And you get some nice stuff for them. If Reknor is in the army, he's treated as the general in addition to your general.
Which is kind of cool.
Yeah, I don't know how often that's going to matter, really, for the mechanics and stuff, but it is an interesting concept that he's kind of like the co-general.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of cool. I like that one, but that's like, if you're a Nighthaunt player, you probably have one of these two factions or processions kind of already done, built, because this is kind of the two ways you play Nighthaunt, as far as I understand it. You got a lot of fast mounted stuff, or you got hordes of stuff. So this is the hordes of stuff side, which is kind of cool.
Yeah.
And then
two War Scroll updates.
Yeah, well, a new War Scroll for the Cruciator.
Oh,
and an update for Dreadscythe. And I before you ask, I have no idea what the update on Dreadscythe is.
I wasn't going to, because I know that you don't play Nighthaunt.
Yeah, if you're a Nighthaunt player, did it get better? Did it get worse? Tell us what you think. I genuinely don't know what Dreadscythe did or doesn't do. I always thought they were a good unit. Like, I think they're a pretty solid Nighthaunt unit, so maybe they just got more solid. I don't know. The Cruciator is good, though. Like, universally, hands down, he is a good inclusion in Night Haunt because he basically makes your Deathless Shrugs a 5-up instead of a 6-up. If he hits with a shooting attack, which, you know, 4 shots, 3s and 3s, Rend 2, he's probably going to get a damage off with it. And if the wound goes off, that's when he gets that bonus. So if you thought a pack of 6 or 40 or whatever Chain Rasp were hard to peel off already, this guy giving them an extra Deathless Shrug it's frustrating.
Yeah.
So he's good. He's good for that.
And then they also got a War Scroll Battalion.
Yeah. Now we're getting into the battalions, the stuff that comes with those weird box sets they put out.
Mm-hmm.
This one, we got one for Night Haunt. This is the worst box set. And I'll tell you why. Because if I didn't tell you why, this would be a very boring show. So it comes with Lady Olender, Dreadscythe Harridan unit, and 2 Mirmorn Banshee units. And what the thing does, the battalion, basically, Lady O gets a 2-up chance to shrug damage to one of the other units. So that's kind of cool. You got an extra 18 wounds for her, which is good, because she is a really good model that tends to just get obliterated as soon as she touches combat. So that's nice. A little extra boost for her. And she also counts as your general. So if you run this in the other thing, you've got 2 generals and your real general. And talk about performance anxiety. You've got your general, and behind him is the head mage and the leader of the Night Haunt. And he's like, yeah, but I'm also spooky. Ooh. Yeah, it's like having your boss shadow you behind work and counteract everything you say. I'm sad that there's not anything in here for King Doot Doot, the guy in the chair.
Oh, yeah.
With the 2 ghosts that constantly remind him what a piece of shit he is.
Yeah.
That's my favorite Night Haunt story. It's because it's just this guy who has to sit in a chair while 2 ghosts are like, hey, do you know how much you suck? This much. You suck! And it's like constantly harassing him. I just imagine they're the ghosts from Dumb and Dumber. It's just those 2 characters. You want to hear the most annoying sound in the world for 38 years? Yeah. Oh man.
I wish more people played Night Haunt like near us, because I've only ever fought them once, I want to say.
Yeah, I think I remember I have fought them twice, not counting my game at LVO, which was Night Haunt. They're a cool army. It's an army that I look at all the time, mm-hmm. and I go, God, it's so cool looking. Like, and I like the concept, and I like the way it plays, and then I look at the price tags for it, and it just...
Yep, that's the whole reason I didn't choose to make that my next army.
Yeah,
it's just the price tag.
It's such a weirdly expensive army to collect. But I don't know, maybe looking at this all hex rate thing, maybe this is, there's something in like a 1,000 point range that I could put together for this. Be kind of fun. So yeah, the reason this is the worst box set ever, by the way, is so far, is that it comes with a named hero character. So why would you ever buy 2? And I feel like that's a weird decision on their part, because all the other sets, like, if you like what's in that box, 2 of them is a really good value. This one is kind of, it's a good value, but what are you going to do with 2 Lady O's?
Yeah, that doesn't really make a lot of sense, does it?
Yeah, not really. So, yeah, it was weird. But flip that page over, and here's a bunch of word soup that I don't even understand.
Yeah.
I hope Josh can explain what the KO got in this book.
Yeah, so Character Overlords got an update on their guild triumph. Well, actually, rather, their triumphs got guilds, which is weird. That was not a thing before. So, like, you know, your triumphs with your, you get triumphs in the game, and you get to use them to do like special abilities. Well, because the KO are KO, we have our own versions of these now that are specifically built towards the particular units. So, like, the Aether Chemist has an Aether Chemist Guild triumph now, which allows you to overcharge its Aether augmentation ability, makes it better. And then, or you can do the large caliber augmentation thing, which allows you to, once per battle, you can choose a friendly sky vessel. And if it's in the garrison, you get to just do a thing better. It's what all the other triumphs do. You get to do one thing better than what you could do before on it. They're neat. I think they will come up because Kerrigan players need to know their rules like really well. So this is like one more thing to add to our list of things to remember, in that you have these to also now choose from. I imagine that we will probably just wind up making a cheat sheet for ourselves at some point that we'll just have all the things that we can do as far as like triumphs and Aether Bowl type stuff.
Yeah, this sounds like a great time to have AOS reminders pulled up.
Yeah, no kidding. So you can
keep track of this stuff.
But then on the other side of things, our War Scroll Battalion, which is really, it's kind of neat. It's an interesting War Scroll Battalion. So it's Drongon's Aether Runners. And this War Scroll includes one Ender Master with a Dirigible Suit, which will be Drongon Humbrolsen, and then two units of either Enderringers or Sky Wardens, in whichever combination you want them to be. And then all of the units from this will be part of the Beric Zilphin Skyport. So you have to run Skyport Beric Zilphin in order to take this battalion. What it does is it allows you to add 3 to the move characteristic of units in this battalion. In addition, at the start of your movement phase, for each unit in this battalion, you can pick one friendly sky vessel that is within 3 inches of that unit, and you cannot pick the sky vessel more than once. But you get to add 3 to the move characteristic of that sky vessel until the end of the phase as well. So,
pretty solid.
What this is kind of done is, and you know, I'll wind up making a list for this because we're trying to like write up a list for each of the different box sets that you can find on AtlanticWarhammer.com.
Nice plug.
Thank you.
Very good.
But what you can do is, because it's Beric Zilphin, so you take, you know, it's Endermaster with a Dirigible Suit that you will probably already wind up making your general, because that allows you to bring the Enrenriggers or the Sky Wardens as battle line. And then Beric Zilphin allows you to bring the frigates as battle line. And so now you just bring 3 frigates, or like it kind of depends on like what combination you want to do with it, but it opens up some doors to kind of stick one of each of these pieces with a frigate. And so everybody becomes very fast and gets to do stuff. And they, if you run Enderriggers, they heal your ship as well as they stay within range of it. So you're just fielding frigates and these units that go with the frigates to just wreak havoc across the board. And I don't know how competitive it will be, because it will probably take out some other things that you would want to include in your army. But I think there's a lot of utility in it. And so I'm curious to see how the top Kerrigan Overlord players will wind up incorporating that, or if they do at all. So
yeah.
It's cool. It's good. If nothing else, it is very interesting.
It is interesting. I mean, games are won by numbers and movement, and having extra movement seems pretty useful. And like, yeah, I think you said earlier that it might just be worth it just to, you know, if you're bringing both of these units already, put it in there for that extra artifact. It sucks that it can't go on the guy, like you said.
Right, but you might just bring like other, like maybe it's okay to get that to lose one of it, or maybe you don't make that the general and you're fine and you just bring 3 frigates, and because you've brought 3 frigates, it doesn't matter. Like, that's your battle line, and so then you just run other stuff, and maybe you're 8 drops, but who cares?
Yeah, at that point, who cares? Like, if you're not playing the drop game competitively, who cares, you know?
Yeah.
We always say, if you go past 3 drops, that's it. Like, 3 and below is the meta-competitive drop for, you know, trying to get first turn priority. Mm-hmm. Otherwise than that, you're not going to do it. Just have fun.
So yeah, maybe the real answer there is to just bring, like, Thunders and slap them in each of the frigates, and then you just have these 3 devastating firing lines that all just exist within ships. You'll never cap a point to save your life, but you'll just murder everything in the shooting phase.
Well, it doesn't matter if everything is dead.
That's true. So, not wrong.
Yeah. You can cap a point with one model if the other opponent has a 0.
This is true.
Yeah.
And then, let's see, we go to a bunch of endless spells.
Yeah, I didn't realize that the spells from Forbidden Power were not included when the Seraphon could do their bound spells.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
It didn't occur to me because I never looked at Seraphon to play. So now you can bind them and bring them in. And these spells, man, I think the Bridge gets used, and I've seen the Soulseeker used once. I have never seen anyone use the Horrorghast or the Shards or Vol. So that's how you pronounce that, by the way. So I think now I must bring these spells to a battle, because Horrorghast is a little head of Nagash that floats around, and you know, he's currently on vacation, so maybe he needs to show up in the form of a little spooky spell.
They also got a really cool battalion on the next one, or at least it looks cool. It's a bunch of dinosaurs. David, tell me about it.
Yeah. What the hell's going on with this?
So this is a interesting battalion. So you take an Engine of the Gods, stay it on with Stink Chief. Or Skink Chief.
No, we're going Stink Chief. That's what it is now.
And a Bastillodon with a solar engine. And once per game, you basically get to pick something within 24 inches of your Stegodon with Skink Chief. And if your Engine of the Gods is alive, you get to roll one dice. If your Bastillodon is alive, you get to roll two dice. And for every two up, you do D3 mortal wounds to something.
Yeah. So basically, once per game, you get to focus that laser beam that blew up Eater of Tomes and do... Is it? I'm guessing... So it's one dice for the... Because this is worded very strangely.
It's one from dice... From what I'm seeing, it's three dice total.
That's what I was thinking. Three dice max. If everybody's still alive, they're within 24 inches of the enemy unit. Essentially, they triangulate their fire.
Yeah.
So once per game, you get a 3d3 mortal wound blast. But, you know... That's okay. It's not bad. I mean, it's potential to do 9 mortal wounds and pick a hero off. Like, that could be pretty useful. Because this, it's not, it is a shooting phase thing, but it's not a shooting attack. We should specify. You just pick an enemy unit.
Right.
So you can pick that hero unit that's all nestled in there and hit him with 3d3. Mm-hmm. That's not bad. I don't think Seraphon has a problem with damage, but that's a nice little touch. And you also get a command trait on your guy, even though he's a named character, because rules don't mean anything in this game anymore until they do. So yeah, what do you think? Does this seem competitive?
No.
Alright, well there you go. Next page. No.
It's interesting, but I don't think it beats the other options you have. Like, if you're going to run this, why run this when you can what's it called? Hold it. Let me bring it up real quick. The basically the other one that you can run. Thunderquake.
Well, that's the problem we've said before with these battalions. Like, especially I think the Liege Kavalos one from Ossiarch is like, it's the same cost and makeup as another battalion that's just better. So you're not really going to see this one unless it's a super thematic thing. I mean, plus this is 140 points, which seems like a lot for
In total, it's 870 points.
Woo!
Yeah!
And that includes your beasties, which, I mean, they're not bad, but
no.
You might as well run them in the other battalions.
Yeah.
Because they get better.
Yeah, it does kind of seem like, well, if you're going to spend almost half your army on one thing, a one-turn 3d3 is not that great, considering Bone Splitters get that as an artifact.
Yeah.
And you can use it every turn. Like, yeah. Too bad, though, because I like this box set. I don't want to play Seraphon. I've painted my fair share of them. I'm done. But
oh, I mean, it's a great box set. It's a fantastic value. I mean, you get two Stegodons and a Bastillodon. That's good money spent.
If you're going to
probably buying them anyways.
Right, if you're going to run a big smashy Seraphon list with lots of big dinos, I mean, this is a good way to get into it. Got three big dinos here. Yeah, so cool. And then we have their mortal enemies on the next page with Atrazan's Blazing Cavalcade. Come one, come all to a Tzeentch battalion that I don't think any of us really know what's going on with this.
No.
Yeah. So this, it's the box set. If you're a Tzeentch player, you've already decided. If you're not a Tzeentch player, you're also not going to understand what any of this does. But it gives a little boost to attacks, and your main character, the Immolator, the guy that got killed by being punched with a boat, he knows like an extra spell, I think. So I have no idea if this is competitive. I don't think it is, because I think the way you win with Tzeentch, if you just don't go crazy shooting, is to just be the guy that brings 90 pink horrors to the table and, you know, has a 300 and something wound army that people have to try to figure out how to get through. And this only lets you bring up to 30 models for the battalion. So probably not going to hit that spot with this. I guess, you know, maybe not. Maybe the artifact's worth it. I don't know. Cause you could run it with the Fate Skimmer and just 30 horrors and call it a day, but that's not what the box set comes with. The box set comes with 10 blues, 10 pinks, and 10 brimstones. So you have to run it. Kind of weird. It's kind of a weird box. But, you know, Zinch players, maybe you just need those demons. Who knows? Not me.
Not I. I don't know. Not, I got nothing. I'm not interested in Zinch. No, thank you.
Sorry, Zinch players. We don't know if that's good or not. But you tell us if it's good or not. Let us know. And then we got some people to kill some Zinch.
Yeah, we got two War Scroll updates on Fire Slayers. For the Doomseeker and the Grimwrath Berserker.
And these are some pretty significant updates that they got on here. I don't know if either of you were familiar with the old ones.
Only in passing, when I looked at them briefly when I was trying to run additional Fire Slayer stuff in Beric Thuring.
Gotcha. So, essentially, they got a little more powerful, a little more damaging, which is good. They kind of needed that. The Doomseeker, these are both in the setting of Fire Slayers. These are both individual hero models that you get that are kind of like they run off by themselves.
Yeah.
I think the Grimwrath Berserker actually is an old Slayer model, I think. From like when Fire Slayers were just Slayers and they were just part of your dwarf army.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that's what he's from. So yeah, you get Doomseeker, a little more beefy. The more damage he takes, the more damage he does back. That's kind of cool. And the fact that you pick a model and he wants to kill that model. And if he is killed, not necessarily by that model, but just within 3 inches of it, he gets the chance to fight before he's removed from play. And it doesn't say he has to fight that model. So you could get kind of crafty with this, use him to, you know, kind of sneak around and do extra damage.
Mm-hmm.
And the Grimwrath, kind of the same thing. He's sort of a target that you just point to stuff. He's a little more damagey, a little more heavy hitter. And he gets to pick a thing at the beginning of the battle that goes for the whole battle, where you can, you know, do more damage to priests, which is, well, I don't know why you'd choose that. Like, unless you're just fighting an army with a lot of blood priests in it or something. But you can make him like a guard. You can have him do some damage. So he's kind of in the same way of the Ogors with the big names that you pick for the tyrant. Same thing. He gets an ability that you can customize. And they're okay. I think they needed this. Fire Slayers, they need a lot more updates than they have just to be an interesting army, but this is nice. And they're both 110 for the Grimwrath Berserker, 90 for the Doomseekers. So honestly, they're cheap enough that if you're playing like another Order army, you know, one of these guys might not be a bad idea if you just got an extra 90 points, because they don't need Fire Slayers to do their stuff.
Yeah, the Doomseeker has been one of those things I've looked at for Beric Thuring quite a bit, because, you know, when you get to bring like that 1-in-4 Fire Slayers into your KO army, because like you said, you can just send this thing out by itself, and if you've kind of picked it right, you can just go nuts on something, and and sometimes that's just what you need in a KO army, is you just need something to be able to go either stand on a point or go fight something one-on-one for a turn.
Yep, do some damage to it, possibly kill a smaller hero, or put enough damage on something that has a profile that, you know, the rest of your army can clean it up. Yeah, I like both these updates. This is like a solid update for both of these characters that didn't change the game, but also didn't, you know, doesn't leave them in the dust.
Right.
Good update. Good job, GW.
And then finally, Guard of Steel Soul.
The man himself with a collection of rules that are, initially you look at them, and I think Josh, you told me that you looked at them and thought they were good, and I feel like I did the same thing, and then I read them. And then I read them again and went, oh wait, that's not what I thought it said.
Oh no.
This is not good at all. So Gardas, he's a Lord Celestant Gardas, so, you know, he's got that keyword. I think some stuff plays off that. He's a Stormcast, he's not gonna do damage, he has an attack profile, whatever. You're not putting him in your list to do damage. Stormcast heroes are there to be force multipliers. So, you know, 6-inch move, 5 wounds, 4 save, 10 bravery. Kind of standard Stormcast guy, basically. He does give a nice... He has a 5-up shrug. And he's a Hallowed Knight, by the way. The nicest thing he gives is he has a 12-inch bubble of 5-up mortal wound resistance. Stormcast have, like, one other way to get mortal wound saves. So this is really nice. Like, this is something
it's a flat 6.
Oh yeah, it's a flat 6 for the Hallowed Knights, right? Yeah, so it is, it's real nice to have something to help with that, because as you guys know, Mortal Wounds pretty much just, they take Stormcast out pretty hard. Mm-hmm. And they got no real defense against that. It kind of sucks that it's locked into Hallowed Knights, and they're not my favorite chamber, but, you know, that's okay. I don't think, Gardas is not a competitive model, he's a fluff model for sure. Because his next ability, roll a dice, if he's slain and a 2-up, he can make a pile and an attack. That's cool, but when you look at his attacks, you're like, all right. Yeah. Yeah, so he'll do another 1 damage, maybe? And then his
max 6 damage hits.
Yeah, and with that, to hit a 4, you know. Yeah, so his Saintly Assault, this is the one that I was like, this is really good, and then I read it and said, this is not good at all. Once per battle, already points against it. At the start of your charge phase, you declare that this model and other friendly Hallowed Knights heroes within 12 inches of him will launch a Saintly Assault. You reroll charge rolls and add 1 to the attacks of their melee. That is good, but this is Hallowed Knights, so you can't bring any named characters that are, you know, really good in melee. And it's just the heroes, which Stormcast heroes aren't really punchy. And they also don't necessarily want to always be in the fight, mm-hmm. because they tend to get killed. So it's kind of a weird, it's very thematic, you know, it's all the heroes charging forward, but it's not that great mechanically.
Yeah, I was just trying to think if you could, like, could you stick that on like a Star Drake and it would maybe do something?
Yeah, I mean, adding 1 to the Star Drake's attacks is okay.
Yeah, but it's still just not optimal. It would be much better if it was not for heroes, but for like a unit.
Oh yeah, if it was just for a unit, that would be fantastic, because he has his command ability, which is, I think, the same as the other Lord Celestine's. Yeah, I think it is, where you just you pick a friendly model that is within 3 inches of an enemy unit and add 1 to hit rolls for friendly units totally within 12 of that model. So basically, if he's fighting, everyone around him fights harder. Yeah, that would make perfect sense if, you know, you combine that with the Martyrs or the Saintly Assault. But doesn't quite work that way.
Yeah, it's very strange that they decided that they did it like that, where it's like, no, you got to do it for a hero. And it's like, but why? Like, he is a hero. He should be making units fight harder, not necessarily another hero fight harder.
Yeah, and like, I don't, as a Stormcast player, I don't want all of my heroes charging it at once in most fights, because I know they're not going to do enough damage to do stuff. And most of my heroes are either little 100-point support pieces, so, you know, 2 or 3 damage max coming out of those, or for the more swingy ones, like the ones that are mounted and stuff, they're still not really going into combat head first.
Right.
Like, they are being positioned to be tactical. So it's weird. It doesn't quite make sense. I love the model. I don't like the rules, but that's okay, because he would make a excellent stand-in for just a normal Lord Celestine, you know, because mm-hmm. he looks pretty cool. Except for, you ready for my biggest gripe?
Yeah.
Here comes my big gripe. He comes with the wrong size base for Lord Celestine. He's a different base. He's on a base that's 10 millimeters bigger than a Lord Celestine. So if you build him as Gardas Steel Soul, you cannot use him as a Lord Celestine, because he's on the wrong base.
Well, that's...
But he's a Lord Celestine.
That's very strange and very silly. He's just a named character of an already existent model.
Yeah, and we've got a couple of those.
Yeah.
So far, what's his face? Steel Heart, the Drakoth guy. He's a named Lord Celestine. So we've had them before. I think Gavra Surcharge is also one. But it's just weird to me that every Stormcast is on the same size base, and then they were like, yeah, this guy's going on a 50 or whatever. Like, seemed weird. It's weird. It bugged me a little bit, because now I've got him on the right size base to use as a Lord Celestine, and his cool crater thing that's built in mm-hmm. Is like flowing over the sides, and I can't decide if it looks good or not. So yeah, little gripe there. Come on, guys.
Yeah, that's a strange one. And that's everything for the rules. That's it.
And that's it.
That's all. That's all the rules.
Points in the back. Yeah. You can look at points and go, hey, points.
Points.
And there's your points.
Good stuff. So before we get out of here, because you know this podcast hasn't been long enough already, right. I do want to get final thoughts on the book from you guys. I want to talk a little bit about, you know, how the Bellicor book fits into what this narrative 3-arc kind of story that we've gotten so far, with 1 arc yet to go. and just, you know, some general other thoughts, ideas, maybe predictions for what Kragnos will be. So, I don't know. Start us off, somebody.
I didn't want to just jump in and be Mr. Talking Guy. But I will be if no one else jumps in.
Yeah, I think you have the floor, my friend.
Yeah, I got the floor. All right, so I love the book. Book's great. A+, good book. What it means for the future, obviously, something's going to happen with Stormcast in the next book or whatever. Mm-hmm. Because Anvilgard has been decimated. Morathi's got a whole bunch of them poisoned. The Vindicators have been knocked out. Like, everything is falling into place that we're going to get a new Stormcast something. I'm betting it's going to be a chamber. I'm hoping Sigmar just opens all the chambers. Like, come on, dude, what are you waiting for? And we just get, like, the rest of the Stormcast, or at least a big release. I want more Stormcast. We've heard rumors that they're going to be kind of more knightly looking, like a little more, like, traditional knights, which could be interesting. I know that's the way people like to kitbash them a lot. I kind of like the weird motif, faceless thing they've got going on, but we'll see. We'll see what we get. So that's the first thing that's going to have to happen. There's going to have to be a resolution to these clouds and the Stormcast, because, you know, something's got to give, right? They can't just keep being killed and not coming back. Because I don't think they're making new ones, really. I don't know for certain what the production time is on a Stormcast, but I don't think they can make a new one fast enough to replace, you know, thousands of them that are being wiped out daily. The whole trick was that they were coming back. So Bellicor he successfully caused all this chaos, capital C, and now he's retreated, but he's not out of the picture. He's going to make a shot at Archaon.
Has to, right?
Yeah. So the next book, we got all these players in place. Kragnos, we know he's going to show up. He's going to lead destruction towards Excelsius, which we'll have. That's where I think we'll see some cool Stormcast stuff coming in. Mm-hmm. And I don't know that Bellicor will play a part in the next book, or if he's going to kind of be like, well, I'm just staying out of that fight because that's a god of destruction and earthquakes. Nah, I mean, when you're trying to predict things and use machinations and planning, destruction is not a friend to you. Because right. They don't even know what they're doing. They just showed up to hit stuff. They don't have any plans whatsoever. So you can't really manipulate them. So I think that's where we're heading. We're going to see destruction v. Sigmar, civilization versus pure wilds. Meanwhile, Slaanesh and the baby are going to be doing stuff to try to free Slaanesh proper. I'm excited that I don't know, like, what the ending of the story is going to be.
Yeah. This is going to be a big question that I don't want to say, it's the end of a thing. But is it are we approaching the end of the Age of Sigmar?
I don't think so, and I'm basing that purely on the fact that all of these SKU numbers and marketing says Age of Sigmar. I feel like if they were going to redo the game, if we were going to not be the Age of Sigmar as the game title, that would be a foolish thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. I don't think so. I don't think people have been like, oh, Sigmar's going to die. That'll kick off third edition. It's like, yeah, he hasn't really shown up. So why would he die? Like, right. Yeah, he might fight Kragnos. That might be what we get, you know, a little God v. God action. That could be kind of cool. Maybe he won't lose his hammer like a dummy this time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. Like I've been so surprised by everything that's happened in the first and third book here.
Yeah.
It's hard to make a prediction.
Yeah. It does feel like we're kind of at a precipice of something. I don't know if we will actually, like, cross it at the end of Kragnos, but it does feel like we're getting there, right? Like, there's something...
We're building towards something.
Yeah, we're building towards something. Because I've heard, like, some scuttlebutt that's like, oh, it's going to be another Age of Chaos. And I'm like, but what about an Age of Destruction? Like, if we're getting... Like, now that we know that Kragnos is a destruction deity, essentially...
Mm-hmm.
maybe we do get to, like, the Age of Destruction, or the pressing of the Age of Destruction up against, like, the Age of Sigmar. And so it's like, the last, because the, I mean, essentially at this point, the vestiges of order are, have been falling. Like, they are falling apart due to the machinations of chaos. And then it's destruction to kind of, they're like holding back, like, order is basically just holding back the doors of destruction from, like, just toppling the rest of everything over. I don't know if that's where we're going, but I could see how the story might get there.
It seems likely. Yeah. It seems like we're building towards something. And I think, like, Soul Wars, you know, with AOS 2.0 built towards the Necroquake, and now we've got endless spells, and we got, you know, the Arcanum Optimar. All the magic is going crazy, and death is on the surge kind of forward. So I think, yeah, we're building towards something like Malign Portents built towards Soul Wars. I mean, I think an Age of Destruction makes sense. Like, the age where chaos, death, or order doesn't matter. If you build a house, we're going to knock it down.
Yeah. Like, your houses are all made of sticks, and we don't care.
And we brought bigger sticks.
Big sticks to knock over small sticks.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, I think death was the big bad guy for the last few years. Chaos was the first big bad guy. Then it was death. Now it's destruction. Yep. Like that. That kind of makes sense, because order are, quote-unquote, the good guys of the setting. They're easier for people to latch onto narratively, because they're, you know, they look human. Right. They got humans and stuff. That's what I think.
I'm on board with that. Now, I do want to get to the big elephant, the giant Tekla-sized hole in this entire plot thread.
Oh, no.
What the fuck was the book Teclis, guys? Like, what was it?
I think it was an accident.
it was paper with ink on it.
That is true. He got you there. Happy show, everybody. Good night. I think you were right. I think Teclis, the book, was supposed to be maybe not part of Broken Realms. Like, I think maybe it was supposed to be like Soul Wars Teclis, you know, and that would tie up the Soul Wars. Mm-hmm. And that would be fine. And then Broken Realms should have included Wrath of the Everchosen to kick it off. Because that's really where this whole thing started, was Katakross invading the Eight Points. Because when he did that, that's when Marathi was like, hey, Arcan's distracted. I'm going to go steal his worm juice. So, like, I feel like Broken Realms should have started with that. And then just swap that in Teclis. But, you know, there was the COVID stuff, there's shipping stuff, there's Brexit. A lot of things happened in the last 2 years that pushed this all over the place. And I think maybe they thought, well, Teclis has got to get out there. We got this Broken Realm series. Let's make it part of that. And that's why it felt so, it didn't feel right.
It felt disjointed from what we, because, I mean, we talked about this in the Teclis book, like, or for our podcast on book Teclis, that it felt so very different from Marathi. Like, it just didn't feel like those two things tied together. Like, there was not a logical jumping point, right? And on the very first page of story, basically, that we had for Bellicor, it's like, oh no, it picks up from Marathi. There's a brief mention of Teclis, and then we don't talk about it anymore. So it is. Yeah, it
definitely was a weird pacing.
Yeah, like, it doesn't fit into the greater narrative that they were looking to do, and they had to stick it in here because it had to go somewhere, right?
I think you're totally right. I think it doesn't make sense in the story where it hits. It felt weird. It felt like not even the same type of publication, because it wasn't really concerned too much with telling a story. It was more about like, hey, here's Teclis doing awesome stuff. Buy all the Lumineth, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. It didn't feel right. I think you're right. I think Teclis is poop. Not the character. Maybe the character. Yeah. But I think you're right. It didn't fit in. And you know what? I bet Kragnos is going to tie it together. And it's going to be awesome. And we're just going to look back at Teclis and laugh. And then get beat by that dumb fox.
Yep. Just over and over and over again. It will get its last laugh. So.
Yeah.
Official final thoughts, anything that you got to get off your chest about Bellicor before we get on out of here?
No.
Go buy it.
There you go. Go buy it.
Yeah.
It was a good, enjoyable book, and I enjoyed the read. I think everyone should go pick it up and read it.
Yeah. learn about Belakor and his evil plans, and how many Seraphon die in horrifyingly grisly ways in this book.
Horrible ways.
Yeah, like seriously bad. There's some rough deaths in this book. We do have one more bit of housekeeping before we leave. I completely forgot this in the beginning. I want to do a shout out to the Tabletop Campaign Repository. That's TCREPO.com. They host basically homebrew for all kinds of stuff, but they have a lot of Age of Sigmar stuff, and they're hosting our custom maps on there. You've got all of our campaign handbooks from their last couple of leagues. So yeah, go check them out. Click around. There's lots of really cool stuff there. Cool custom characters, tons of custom battle maps. Like, I can't imagine you would, and they got more than Age of Sigmar. They got Necromunda, Mordheim, Warcry, 40K, all the Games Workshop stuff. So yeah, go check them out. They're cool folks, and support them if you can. Tell your friends, and play some of the stuff. Go download our stuff so our numbers look better.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good stuff indeed. Again, check us out on Facebook. Check us out on Twitter and on the Instagrams. All kinds of great stuff that's getting posted
YouTube.
Up there. Yeah, YouTube. Yeah, YouTube.
Yeah, I think that's it. I think that's everything we have.
I believe so.
Our website.
Oh, yeah, we have a website. I think it's
AtlantaWarhammer.com.
Yeah, I think it's AtlantaWarhammer.com.
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 Very important one there. And once again, thank you to our sponsors. Gigabytes Cafe in Marietta, Georgia. That's the
Blueberry Podcasting.
And Llama Juice Painting.
And so for the Atlanta Warhammer Podcast.
I'm David.
I'm Josh.
And I'm Zach, saying stay safe out there.
It's like that, y'all. It's like that. It's like that.